scratch about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
I hope you don't mind if I don't use anesthetic. It interferes with my readings.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
Peter. Richard. Johnson. Willie. Cyclops. Admiral Winky. Dr. Longshanks. Buster McThunderstick. Captain Shaftsalot. Prince Everhard III. Colonel Poker. The Bald Avenger. Gentlemen, we salute you.
We all have some crazy urges from time to time, but you just can't act on them. You have to bury them way down deep inside. You have to say, get out of here, you crazy urges. You are not welcome in this brain of mine.
Represent!
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
So this is your first time dabbling in food.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
That is the worst 3 seconds of my life, listening to that.
Roll another one.
How dare me? How dare you?
Just like the other one.
Is it legal to be this insane?
It seems to be about to quit.
And I there it is.
Another hit.
It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine.
Let's shine.
It's our time
Let's
to shine.
Let's shine, Dick.
What is your job?
Roll another one.
Do you know something I don't like? Chocolate chip cookies.
Just like the other one.
Shut up, Leonard. Nobody even knows what you're talking
this
about.
Seems to be about to end.
I just want to ask you one question. Why are you so good?
If you think that I'm gonna masturbate after this tonight, you're right.
Has anyone ever known a good person named Kevin?
Just pass it around.
You are not going to like what happens next.
Just pass it on.
And now.
Our feature presentation.
I know you didn't recognize that, so I'm going to tell you that was Poker Face by Wing.
Oh, Poker Face.
Yes.
I thought she was insulting a lady. That's what I heard.
Morning, no. Everybody. It's the Kevin and Bean Show. It's a brand new show, and it's Friday.
It is finally Friday. This was one of those 12-day weeks, so I'm happy to see that Friday has arrived. Here's a story that everybody has been talking about this week. Kevin, I'm sure you saw Caterina Miglerini in the news.
Sure.
She is the young woman who just auctioned off her virginity. She is 20. She is Brazilian.
Oh.
And she is attractive enough to want to have sex with.
Okay.
I don't know, that I'd pay as much as Natsu from Japan is paying. What do you suppose her virginity went for, 20-year-old? It's been put it up for auction, I think, mid-September or so. The auction just closed. I think yesterday, the day before. How much do you think she went for?
I don't know. Sex one time. I would say 30 grand.
30 grand.
Yeah.
Good guess. Well, leading into the final day, the price was at 190,000.
So by good guess, you mean bad guess.
No, I think that's reasonable.
Oh.
I think it's a reasonable guess. That's about what I would imagine, too.
190,000.
So it was 190 going into the final day. Then there was a flurry of bidders who, you know, do the smart thing in an auction and wait to jump in at the last minute. And the final bid that Natsu ended up paying was $780,000.
Wow. Is that a year time of sex with her, or just once?
No, it's one time.
Huh.
By the way, this company, and I don't know how this whole thing got started, but they were also auctioning off the virginity of a male counterpart, a young man named Alex Stepanov. What do you think his went for?
What was her total?
$780,000 for him. What do you think?
I'm going to say his is $19.99.
Another excellent guess. Maybe a little high. That's just from somebody who's being generous. But this one went for $3,000. from a woman in Brazil named Nina. So he's going to have sex and get some money out of it, which is a pretty good deal.
Turns out women don't have to pay for it.
Right. I was curious, so I dug a little deeper in the fine print to find out what you're going to get for your $780,000. And these are the rules for both virgins, not just for the lady, but for both of them.
Wait, are you the guy that bought the woman?
Am I Natsu from Japan? No, I'm not.
Okay. All right.
The winning bidder cannot be intoxicated during their time with the virgin, cannot involve anyone else in the consummation, cannot kiss the virgin.
Okay.
How about that, by the way? Cannot have or expect to fulfill any fantasies or fetishes during their time with the virgin. Cannot use any sex toys or other objects with the time with the virgin. It's funny. You know, when we do news stories and we find out that a hooker is charging like a grand, we say, for a grand, you also ought to get a free lawnmower or something. Yeah. You know, we always expect to get more for our money than they offer. You can't – look at all the stuff you can't do for your almost 800 grand with this
But
lady,
I would imagine
right?
They have to put those rules in because, you know.
People will just come in there and they'll want to beat them or something, right?
Yeah.
Cannot use a telephone or any other recording device during the time of the virgin. The length and duration of the sex is to be agreed upon by both participants before consummation begins. Minimum consummation time, 1 hour. So what's the guy going to do with the other 59 minutes after?
Talk to her about how much fun she had?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, apparently this is a legitimate auction, and apparently they say it's legal because I don't know what the rules are in Brazil, where Catarina lives, but they say that the fulfillment is going to take place someplace where it is legal. So you don't have to worry about running afoul of the law if you're the person.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of these stories, but then they come out, that's illegal, they had to pull it, whatever.
Right,
they usually don't see them through.
No, according to this, you're not allowed to pull it either. That's also on the list of things you're not allowed to do. So anyway, so there you go. That tells you the difference between the worth of a man and the worth of a woman right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tell you that. Good times.
All right, let's talk about today's Kevin Amicho, shall we?
Am I supposed to be moved by that pathetic tale of woe?
I haven't really gotten to the good stuff yet.
All right.
We have RZA in the studio today.
Yeah!
RZA. How crazy is that? Talking about the man with the iron fists.
I'm very excited. By the way, I think from now on, in honor of our guest visit today, at least for today, I'd like to be known as BZA.
BZA.
Could it be Kevin and BZA just for today?
Sure.
All right,
sure.
Good. Because he and I are essentially cut from the same cloth.
It's like you're twins.
Right.
Yeah. Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead, will be here today. So we talk about this Sunday's episode where you get to meet the governor.
Why is he even doing press for The Walking Dead?
I don't know. That's a good question.
It's already 10 million people a week are watching it. What is it?
Well, let's not talk him out of it, though, is my point.
What's he hoping to gain, is what I'm saying.
I don't know. Joshua Jackson is going to be on the program today talking about Fringe. I need a refresher course on Fringe. That's gotten nutty. And it started nutty. Cousin Sal with his NFL picks because it's Friday. Ralph's got the movie beat because it's Friday. You are a male cheerleader. Well, I have a very basic understanding of who male cheerleaders are, and I think I'm completely wrong. So we're going to talk to people who were male cheerleaders and ask why they did it, how they did it. If they're not gay, I'll be surprised, and I believe that's probably what's going to happen. Is that, you know, Samuel L. Jackson came out that he was a male cheerleader, and that just knocked me on my ass. I had to try and figure out, well, wait a minute. How can that be?
Maybe you're confused because he came out as a male cheerleader, and that's what threw you.
Ah, that could be. And John Stockwell, who has a Nat Geo special called Team 6, The Raid on Osama Bin Laden. So we got that coming up as well. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beat next.
So it's salute to Veterans Night there at AT&T Park in San Francisco for Game 2 of the World Series, Kevin. And they bring out this Marine who gets a tremendous standing ovation. He's a triple amputee. He's lost both legs.
Wow.
And an arm. He walks out to the mound throws a perfect strike first pitch.
Yeah.
And I thought, what about our boy Kevin?
But
what about our boy Kevin in two times? As I think once you threw it to the stands, the other time you hit the dirt or something, right?
I think I hit the dirt both times, and then I also fell once. But
right.
But that dude started out way better than me.
Because he's a Marine?
He's a Marine, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Triple amputee, throw it a perfect strike. We all thought about you, though. I just want you to know your legacy is alive. Your big league legacy is alive, Kevin.
So happy that's what you remember.
5:52, it's Friday. Ralph is here. Time for the Showbiz Beat. Now, what's going on?
Well, further proof that Taylor Swift is Tadoff Switler in reality.
Uh-oh. She is the devil.
Let the songwriting begin because she's broken up with another dude. Remember that 18-year-old high school junior she was banging?
Yes.
Her statutory rape victim?
They've split up. Apparently Taylor Swift has broken the heart of an 18-year-old boy.
Well done, Taylor Swift. Yeah. Well done.
First she broke
I'm sure she'll write some freaking song, yeah. And it was all his fault. You were just too young, too young, too young, and I was older. F you.
I heard, Ralph.
I hope a tree falls on her.
That he was not that into her.
I heard that he was head over heels in love with her and is shattered. According to the story that I'm reading here in my hand.
Wait, I'm just guessing. Bean, was that a song title?
No, it wasn't at all. Okay. No.
I thought you were being cheesy.
I heard that she's just desperate to settle down and be with her soulmate, and he's just like a kid in high school who wants to date, and he just wasn't that into her, thought she was, you know, a little crazy.
Really?
But who knows?
Connor, friends of Connor say the romance had to take a backseat to Swift's work duties, including her press tour for her new album and her touring plans, and he never got to see his beloved.
Hmm.
But the good news is she has bought a house right there near his family home, so I'm sure he'll be running into her all the time, so that'll make him feel good.
That's not going to be awkward.
No, not at all.
With a parade of new endless men that he'll have to watch her with.
She's got a Cape Cod mansion within spitting distance, say friends, of the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport. However, there's an upside. There's an excellent chance that home will be destroyed by Hurricane Sandy this weekend. So there may be a silver lining to this whole story.
I hope only that house goes down.
She, of course, is still, according to sources, pining after Patrick Schwarzenegger, too. Another Kennedy.
See, she has to work her way through like 13, 14 guys so she can get another album.
To get to Arnold.
Right.
That's what she wants.
Ah, you are never, never, never getting off my penis.
Halloween parties this weekend. A lot of Halloween parties. Saturday night, of course, is going to be the big night for parties since Halloween's on a weeknight this week.
Yep.
What are you going to be, ladies? What are you going to be?
Sexy fill in the blank.
Sexy Big Bird. Sexy SWAT team officer. Sexy Robin Hood. Sexy nurse. Sexy Stephen Hawking. What are you going to
what?
Be?
There's a sexy Stephen Hawking?
There's sexy everything. Well, some women are fed up with the sexy trend of costumes.
Oh, it's one day.
And so they have started a new website called Take Back Halloween.
No.
Where women can dress up as famous historical figures of power.
No.
To represent the strong goddess side of women and not simply their sex appeal.
No. No!
Why be a sexy firefighter when you can be Madeleine Albright?
Why be a sexy SWAT officer when you can be literature's Jane Austen?
Oh, this is going to be the least...
Artist Frida Kahlo.
The least successful campaign ever.
Joan of Arc.
Wow.
The Queen of Sheba. Queen Victoria. Greek goddess Athena.
Look.
Egyptian goddess Isis. The volcano all, goddess of Hawaii.
They're legitimate costumes for ugly girls, right?
Oh, wow.
I mean,
that's
no,
Bean at krock.com. Bean at krock.com.
No, I'm just saying, there are some people who for whom Queen Victoria is a good match. But for the rest of you ladies, you know, it's Halloween.
Right.
Get them out.
Get them out.
Right. Put them on the glass.
Put them on the glass. There, you can find a group of women who are just cheesed up about just about any aspect of life, I think.
Yeah.
So you can go to takebackhalloween.org if you'd like your free guide on how to dress up as famous historical female characters of power.
That's great.
Who are you? I'm Jane Austen. Can't you see I'm writing Pride and Prejudice here in this notebook? Get out of my party. Get out of my party. That's what I would say to Jane Austen showing up. Unless you're sexy Jane Austen, and then you'd be welcome. Kristen Stewart is going to have to jump through a lot of hoops in order to get back in good graces with her boyfriend, Robert Pattinson.
Oh, I thought that was a done deal. They were all happy. They're
well,
all
they
together.
Are back together again. They are going through individual and couples counseling. And sources say that Robert is expecting Kristen to pay for both. Here's the other things on the list of things that Kristen must do in order to be in good stead once again with Robert. She has to cut all the male friends out of her life. No more male friends.
That's absurd.
Can't be trusted around men. Why is that absurd?
It's just absurd. If you have to do that, you shouldn't be together with that person.
Bye-bye.
You just shouldn't. You can't avoid a whole half the world.
Well, she's not Amish. She doesn't have to avert her eyes. But
that's
she, her close male friendships, ditch them. She has to quit hanging out with her single girlfriends who go out on the prowl. Go to the nightclubs looking for boys to bang. That's just asking for trouble, according to Robert. Cut all contact with ex-boyfriends.
What's he, a Scientologist?
My favorite one on the list, undergo a lie detector test.
You liar!
Apparently, Kristen, as you can imagine, is not pleased about the idea, but is willing to consider it and go through anything in order to reestablish her deep, deep amour with Robert Pattinson.
When does that come out? November 14, 15, something like that, the new Twilight?
Twilight Breaking Hard, yeah. Die Harder.
Yeah.
This time it's personal.
Like 2-3 weeks?
I think so, yeah.
A day after that, it's going to come out that they broke up again.
Why do you hate love, Kevin?
I don't.
Why do you hate love?
There's no love there. You look
Why
at that
do
list.
You hate love?
There's no love.
These asking for a little reestablishment of trust after his heart has been trampled with her, tramping about with her director.
He's going to cut her loose the second that movie starts playing in one theater.
You don't know Japanese business, man.
I don't. That's true.
You know, that'd be a great phone topic is what is the most you had to do to get back together with someone?
And was it worth it?
Yeah. What did they ask of you in order for you to get back with someone?
Like you had to give up something.
You give up something or you had to do something for them. They said, okay, yeah, okay, we'll get back together if you A, B, and C. But take a lie detector test, I would assume, would have to be one of the big ones.
Yeah.
Can't imagine anyone doing more than that. But, you know, you have to stop talking to your family. I can imagine people would do anything for relationships and do. This isn't always the healthy situation. And James Franco wants you to know he's single. A lot of rumors in the tabloids in the past couple of weeks about who he was dating, who he's sleeping with. Franco has dismissed the speculation that he is seeing Ashley Benson.
Who is that?
Ashley Benson is... Bean, you
is
know.
Is she an actress?
Yes. Damn it. What is she in?
Yeah, I kind of, sort of do.
Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Anyway, he also was rumored to be connected with Kristen Stewart. Because they apparently went to some film festival together in Toronto. Selena Gomez. I think Ashley Benson was dating Justin Bieber's best friend.
There you go.
And that was where the rumor really took on hurricane proportions.
Hey, King of Mexico, tell us on the air what you just said in my headphones.
She's on Pretty Little Liars.
There you go.
Pretty Little Liars.
Anyway, here's the statement from James Franco. I hear that I've been dating Selena Gomez, Kristen Stewart, and Ashley Benson. Hot damn, I'm a lucky guy. I wish I'd gotten closer than the 13th row of a theater in Toronto where Kristen gave her on-the-road Q&A, but I didn't. Not only did I not talk to her, I didn't even go to Soho House where I supposedly asked her out on a date. As for Gomez and Benson, those are Bieber's girls, and I wouldn't dare tangle with the Biebs. I heard he wants to kick my ass. Yikes! So, no truth to those rumors. Apparently all is well with Franco. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. John Heder, Napoleon Dynamite! Let's not forget, too, how great he was in Blades of Glory with Will Ferrell.
That was a great movie,
He
too.
Was brilliant in that film. 35 years old today. Keith Urban, country singer. 45 years old today. Are you watching The Nashville, by the way?
No.
I'm in love with The Nashville now.
No
Hard
interest.
To believe. A guy who doesn't like country music is in love
that
with
that weird.
Show. It's very entertaining. Kelly Rowan of The O.C., 47 years old today. You guys met her on Breakfast with The O.C., didn't you? You guys do a breakfast with that cast?
Yes. We did. Yeah.
She's that beautiful older blonde?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, nothing? Yeah,
Natalie Merchant of 10,000 Maniacs. Whatever happened to that band? Whatever happened to that girl? I liked their music.
Oh, there we go. I say,
hey.
Was that early to mid-90s?
I guess so, yeah.
I think.
Tom Cavanaugh from Ed and Scrubs is 49. Cary Elwes from the Saw movies and The Princess Bride. He was the Dread Pirate Roberts in that film. 50 years old today. Dylan McDermott is 51. Rita Wilson, film producer and actress, wife, of course, of Tom Hanks, is 56. Pat Sajak, your Wheel of Fortune host, turns 66 years old today. Looks pretty good for 66.
Yeah, no kidding.
And my buddy, writer, actor, genius, Seth MacFarlane. Who gave, of course, Family Guy and American Dad and Ted. He is 39 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and this is the Kevin and Biza Show at 25
Stop
minutes
it.
After
6. Stop
Thank
it.
You. Thank you very much.
Stop it.
John Stockwell joins us in about 15 minutes or so. He is the director of SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden. I don't think I'll ever get tired of hearing about that amazing day in U.S. military history. That's coming up first, though. It's Friday. Ralph is here. It's time for the Movie Beat.
In a world, someone has been watching. One man who risked everything.
I'm sorry. I have not seen any of your films.
Without seeing the movies, Ralph
Carmen's Movie Beat.
Welcome to my world.
Great batch of very diverse films today that just look awesome, and then one that's got Chelsea Handler in it. So, a lot to choose from this weekend. Let's start off with an interesting documentary. If you are a music fan, chances are either you've heard of or appreciate the music of Tony Bennett. The guy's been around forever, and not only is he a classic singer of standards, great jazz and pop singer, but he also has kept himself fresh and reinvented himself by teaming up with a lot of current artists and doing a lot of great duets.
Mm-hmm.
The film is called The Zen of Bennett. It is a documentary set on the eve of Tony Bennett's 85th birthday and features Tony singing, but also features him working with such artists as Lady Gaga, Andrea Bocelli, and Amy Winehouse. So you get to see Amy Winehouse perform before she passed. It's in limited release, but if you look hard enough, you'll probably be able to check it out. It may be something you may want to see. Also coming out this weekend, Fun Size is a Halloween film. It's not a horror film. It's a comedy, I guess. Technically, it would be put in the comedy section.
What does Fun Size mean?
Fun Size is the size of those candy bars. The Fun Size candy bars that you give, give out on Halloween, right?
The bogus ones.
Here's the premise. Ren's Halloween plans go awry when she's made to babysit her brother, who disappears into a sea of trick-or-treaters. With her best friend and two nerds by her side, she needs to find her brother before Mom finds out he's missing. I loved this film when it was called Adventures in Babysitting. The Halloween version. Here's your cast. Victoria Justice, Johnny Knoxville, Chelsea Handler, and Anna Gasteyer. Let me know how this one is, folks. Oh, man. Is this just a dusty old, hoary old plot just been trucked out and slapped on some Halloween makeup? So you got that going for you. Here are some clips from the trailer of Fun Size.
It's Aaron, a smiley face emoticon. That seals the deal, Ren. That is how love works. I put Nair on my butt this morning.
You Naired your butt?
Yeah, confirmed.
Oh,
nerd alert. Hey, guys, we need a car.
I don't really get all the hype about Aaron.
Well, A, he's gorgeous. And B, please refer to A. What? Hey, stop her! Tiger! Let me go and I'll let you touch my boob for 10 seconds.
20 and I can pick a cold day.
You let me know how that one works out.
Okay. That's from a movie.
Yep. It's like they stole the dialogue from Clueless and then slapped it on some other film's plot and then got Chelsea Handler in it.
Just what else you got?
I got this. I got Chasing Mavericks. If you're a surfer, you might enjoy Michael Apted's new film starring Johnny Weston, Gerard Butler, Elizabeth Shue, Abigail Spencer. Story of a young dude who finds out the mythic Mavericks surf break is just miles from his home in Santa Cruz. One of the biggest waves on Earth can be found at Mavericks, so he enlists the help of a local surfing legend to train him to survive it. Chasing Mavericks. Yeah! Here's Gerard Butler as that same said surf legend talking to the surfer kid about big wave surfing.
Surfing normal waves is about how you perform when everything goes right. Big wave surfing, it's a different ballgame. It's about how you perform when everything goes wrong. One bump off the face of that wave, and you're hitting the water like concrete at 50 miles an hour. Then you got 1,000 tons of water coming down on top of you. It's knocking you senseless, ripping you apart, and pushing you down to a place that is so deep and so dark. You don't want to be there.
Well, then I'm not going to do that. That sounds like a bad thing to do, I would say, if I was that surfer kid. Well, you make it sound not at all appetizing. I think I'll pass on the big waves. Gerard Butler, thank you. Cloud Atlas opens up this weekend. This looks awesome and yet honked up all at the same time.
I've seen the trailer 10 times. I have no clue what this is about.
I think you can watch the film 10 times and you won't have any clue what it's about. But it doesn't mean that it's not an amazing cinematic experience. Getting great reviews from critics who say it is a story, it's a multi-generational story of people sharing the same life force, living many different lives in the past, in the present, in the future. We get the large picture of humanity in Cloud Atlas. Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, Hugh Grant, Hugo Weaving. It's an exploration how individual lives impact each other and how none of us live in a vacuum. Kevin, the Cloud Atlas. Here's some clips from the trailer.
This is the Cloud Atlas sextet?
I doubt there's more than a handful of copies in all of North America.
But I know it.
That's it. The music from my dream.
Their whole movement, I wrote, imagining us meeting again and again in different lives, in different ages.
I can't explain it, but I knew when I opened that door,
a powerful deja vu ran through my bones.
I heard it in a dream.
That sounds awesome. They're all connected by these live, this life force, but also this piece of music is a recurring theme throughout all of the lives of all of these characters, past, present, and future.
Let me know how that is.
Oh, Kevin! Kevin!
I'm saying, let me know.
Not loud enough for you?
No.
What if they really turn it up in the theater that you're watching?
Is there anything in 3D that involves Halloween?
Silent Hill!
That's what I'm talking about.
Revelation 3D also opens up this weekend. We had the lovely and talented Adelaide Clemens in earlier this week talking about it. This is your quintessential horror film. You got monsters, you got the creatures from hell, you've got a beautiful teen girl who has to be plunged into this horrific nightmare in order to save herself and her father, and all of us really, from the demons that are spawned from hell. It's in 3D, it's violent, it's action-packed, it's horrific, it's full of monsters and creatures, lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. Here's some scenes from Silent Hill 3D Revelation.
How can I find my dad?
Heather, help me.
Tell me where he is.
In the sanctuary, beneath the amusement park. I can help you.
Heather,
stop!
We need a knife!
Come in.
Ah! Yeah, pick up something scary. Enjoy your Halloween.
Think about a knife a little earlier in the story, huh?
Kevin always carries one, just in case he runs across demons from hell.
You never know.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the movie beat.
All that you know is at an end.
That was Ralph Garman.
Ralph Garman.
Movie beat.
Kevin and Bean. Kevin and Bean.
White meat. Dark meat. All will be carved.
PROQ.
It is the world famous K-Rock at 6:37.
Kevin and Bean Show here on a Friday. You read the book by the SEAL Team 6 member who was in on the Osama bin Laden raid, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I didn't because books are for losers. This is the good news for guys like me because now it's on TV, which is the way the good Lord intended. SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden, airs on Sunday, November 4th. That's a week from Sunday at 8 on the National Geographic Channel. We are very excited to welcome director John Stockwell to the show. Hi, Mr. Stockwell. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Bean.
Sure.
It's great to have you on. This is a story that has captured the imagination of people all over the world ever since it happened, and you got to make the movie about it. Tell me how this happened.
The script came to me from a producer named Nick Chartier, who produced The Hurt Locker. I didn't want to do it because I just thought it was too daunting a subject matter and just trying to figure out what really happened. It's a story you'll never get official confirmation or denial from anyone about. And we wrote and shot the movie before No Easy Day, so.
Sweet!
I do read books, and although when we met with the SEALs that we talked with said, we'll never write a book, we'll never go on TV. Even if we were on the actual raid itself, we wouldn't tell you. So I was pretty surprised when Mark Bissonnette did write that book.
No kidding. Now, there was a little bit of controversy about your movie when it was being made because there were some who accused the Obama administration of providing classified information and maybe being a little too in bed with trying to get the story told their way. Anything to that?
No truth to that. We didn't get cooperation from the White House or DOD. People are very tight-lipped, and that's why I had many off-the-record conversations, but I was concerned about the military community and the intelligence community and the local nationals on the ground in Pakistan who aided us. I think the controversy actually came when Harvey Weinstein picked up the movie and the air date. That sort of sparked more controversy.
The air date just before the election, you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Gotcha.
But the movie is not politicized one way or the other, right?
No. Look, what I'm most proud of is that it's Republicans, Democrats. It really was a case of the intelligence community working seamlessly with the military. Yes, the president at the time, the commander in chief, was Barack Obama. Some people have said that we actually, we've gone so far as to have Barack Obama being the guy who fires the shot that kills Osama bin Laden. I can assure you that's not how the story unfolds.
That would have been grandstanding.
That would have been funny.
Just get me in the house with him one-on-one.
Now, after the raid happened and was a success, everybody was happy, I think, to see that it had gone off well and that it had gone according to plan. But it was by no means a done deal or an easy mission. And there were a lot of people, including those in the intelligence community, who did not think the raid was a good idea, correct?
Many. I mean, that's the after doing the research I did, I wouldn't have made the call. And Joe Biden certainly said, don't do it. Robert Gates said, don't do it. You know, in the primaries, Hillary, Mitt Romney, they all said, don't do it. And there were so many what ifs. What if the house were rigged to explode? They thought the occupants had Stinger missiles. There was a launching pad on the roof. You know, there was a Pakistan military academy a mile away. What if they engaged our troops? If that chopper had crashed, I mean, it did crash.
It did, yeah.
If the soldiers inside had been killed, and the biggest what if that had happened and Bin Laden wasn't there, because we didn't have 100% certainty.
Right.
And I can tell you the debate the other night would have been a whole different affair, and it's very likely Barack Obama would be Jimmy Carter, a one-term president.
Talking to John Stockwell.
He may still be.
Yeah. Talking to John Stockwell about SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden, and it's going to be on November 4th. On that
day, November 4th, yep, 8 p.m.
Were you surprised by all of the variables involved in how that decision was made? I mean, you said you wouldn't have made the choice, but I mean, did you have any idea when you started researching this project how many things could go wrong on a mission like this?
Not only how many things could go wrong, but I'd always imagined that with our high technology, we had some sort of facial recognition software. We had some 100, you know, we had satellites, we had boots on the ground that said, yeah, it's him, we know, let's go. And that just wasn't the case. There was still a high degree of uncertainty. And look, I was also, the shocking thing for me, I was in Thailand on my way to Indonesia when the president addressed the nation, and I was surprised that no news about it leaked out beforehand,
because, yeah, right.
You know, our government's not great at keeping secrets, and
well, especially when you give The Rock a Twitter account. if you recall, that's how the news was broken to the world, is that The Rock tweeted
that's
it, right?
That's right, and I'm sure he you know, I'm sure he knows everyone on that mission.
Now, you read No Easy Day. You said
I did.
Did you reconsider anything in your film? I mean, did it change you? I wish I'd done this differently. Or?
No, you know, pretty much the way he describes things unfolding is how we depicted our movie. We have a slightly different version of Bin Laden's reaction, or how the exact, because of, look, a big choice we had to make was, and you know, was he armed? Was he unarmed? Was he in an offensive position? Defensive? Was this a capture? Was this really a capture or kill raid? So our version is slightly different, but honestly, we don't really dwell much on Bin Laden himself.
Right.
Right. Gotcha.
Well, it does look fascinating, and I'm very excited to see it. SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden, again, is happening on a week from Sunday at 8 o'clock on the Nat Geo channel. By the way, Mr. Stockwell, just because I don't know when we'll have you on again, you wrote the movie Rockstar, right?
I did.
Kevin and I were in that. We were two of the journalists in that movie who got to interview you know, Mark Wahlberg at the press conference and everything like that. And I just wanted to thank you, because you know, we still get those big royalty checks for like 79 cents about twice a year. So if it weren't for your good work, man, we might not have eggs on the table. So thank you for that, sir.
Yeah, that was cool. I got to go on the road with Korn and Pantera and Judas Priest, and that was fun to
research. That started our illustrious movie career as well.
And also ended it. Thanks. So,
John Stockwell, director of SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden. Thanks for the time today. We enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks, guys.
That's not necessary. Nobody needs that.
Group Love, and Ralph on the world famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ at 6:53.
It's time for the showbiz beat, but why is the king in here? What's going on
with
Dave?
He's the king. He can go wherever he wants.
Yeah, I do what I want.
Yeah.
Easy.
Kizza.
Kizza.
You're not Kizza.
He's Kizza.
Dizza's
here.
He's not Kizza.
Dizza. Dizza. The Kizza of Mizza is here.
What's going on with you guys? We have a very busy show. Come on. We can't afford
any
speed bumps.
I just wanted to mention that tomorrow at Santa Anita will be the K-Rocktoberfest. You know, I'll be out there, Lightning will be out there, and our very own beer mug will be out there.
Woo!
But, you know, normally we don't want beer mug out there, but
right. This
time
we're
going to do something that I think everyone will enjoy. We're going to put them in a dunk tank and have people throw balls at them and dunk them.
Yeah!
Come on!
But don't make him hit the target for him to go down. Make him throw it at him.
No, but what's awesome is that, you know, we're going to charge a little bit of money for it, and all proceeds are going to go to Kevin's charity, Friends and Helpers. So Great. It's a little fundraiser.
That's
so
awesome.
Just keep dunking beer mug all day long.
All day long, yeah. You know, there's going to be the first race is at 1 o'clock, so there's a chance to, you know, make some money. And then there's going to be music from Dramarama, and, you know, admission's only $5. So come on out.
There you go.
Good deal.
Can we put piranhas in that water?
That'd be awesome. Our electric eels.
It's not the first time beer mug's had balls coming at him, by the way.
True. 6:54, we're going to talk to you, the Kevin and Bean listeners, who used to be, or maybe still are, male cheerleaders. That's going to be the topic of discussion next half hour. Male cheerleaders on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, Ralph's got the showbiz beat.
U-G-L-Y, you ugly. Right? Is that what they say?
I don't believe most of them do.
No, sorry. Ah, this Breaking Amish is a phenomenon.
It's a great show.
The ratings have been comparable to Honey Boo Boo.
Really?
Yeah, you don't hear as much, obviously, press about it, but it's been a huge hit for TLC, so they are having a two-hour, two-part special, getting the five cast members of TLC's Breaking Amish back together again to address the rumors that the original series was faked and some of the cast members have already hooked up or been married or had children or been arrested or not even members of the Amish community at all. Today's celebrity birthday is John Heder. You know him from Napoleon Dynamite, Blades of Glory. What a talented guy. Funny. 35 years old today. My buddy Seth MacFarlane, writer, actor, genius from Family Guy. And, of course, Ted, 39 years old today. Keith Urban is 45. Kelly Rowan, the OC, is 47 years old today. Natalie Merchant, she was the lead singer for 10,000 Maniacs. And then had a successful solo career, and I haven't heard from her in a while.
She does still make solo records. I just don't think they've been capturing the imagination of the public quite so much.
She's 49 years old today. Tom Cavanaugh from Ed and Scrubs is 49. Gary Elwes from Saw and The Princess Bride, 50 years old today. Dylan McDermott from The Practice is 51. Rita Wilson, producer and actress, and of course wife of Tom Hanks, is 56 years old. And Pat Sajak from Wheel of Fortune! How long has that show been on the air?
All years.
And
forever.
Pat wasn't even the first host of that show.
He wasn't?
No. I think it was Chuck Woolery, I think. Anyway, he's 66 years old. Today I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
I didn't think it was possible for Beer Mug's stories to be worse off the air than they are on the air. They are.
Come on.
My stories go nowhere.
It's good.
Have a little discretion.
All right, you
guys, the guy who tells stories no one cares about.
Right, but if it's coming from me, I should know from bad stories, right?
Wow.
You have to admit, Mug stories are even worse than mine.
Well, in a different way, absolutely.
You can listen to K-Rock to score passes to the 40th annual Halloween Haunt at Knott's Scary Farm. Front of the line passes for all 13 mazes. What's better than something like that for Halloween? Details at K-Rock.com. Your chance to win coming up. A few days ago, Ralph brought up in the showbiz beat, and I don't remember why he mentioned Samuel L. Jackson in his report, but he said that he used to be a male cheerleader at Morehouse College. Did he say that's where he met his wife? Is that maybe where it came from?
I think so.
And we thought Samuel L. Jackson as a male cheerleader was a little bit of a surprise. And then we started thinking, I don't know that we've ever done the phone topic where we have male cheerleaders call in and tell us what's actually going on in that sport, because I think there are probably a lot of misconceptions about it, right?
Well, I know I had a huge misconception that it just kind of becomes part of your personality, you know, as you grow older. When I was in high school, if you were athletic, you played sports. If you were gay, you cheered.
Well, you can be gay and athletic, of course, though.
Of course.
There are lots
but if you're gay and athletic,
play sports.
You play sports. That was my high school brain, for God's sakes.
Right.
But to find out that Samuel L. Jackson was a male cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know people are going to call and go, I'm around the women all the time. But don't you just picture, I don't know, losers?
No.
You don't?
I don't. I don't picture losers, and I don't picture gay for male cheerleaders. It's not a choice that I would make, but I can see that for some people they might consider it fun. For that reason, by the way, that you get to be around doing the cheerleading stuff with the cheerleaders.
All of my misconceptions, by the way, have been shattered by Samuel L. Jackson. Finding out that he was a male cheerleader changed my mind on everything. But what is it? What's the real reason that you become a male cheerleader? You must get mocked.
I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel the same way about
small brains like myself?
Do you feel the same way about male nurses? Does it still strike you as odd when you meet a male nurse? Because there are lots of those, too, and that's a predominantly woman's occupation.
No, it doesn't. But maybe because I've had more interaction with male nurses, you know, recently. I don't really hang out with male cheerleaders.
Mm-hmm.
I never did, but, you know, I don't. My misconception was clearly a misconception, but.
Well, we want to take some calls at 1-800-520-1067. We want to hear from male cheerleaders, past or present. Jason, you hang on. We'll get to you in a second. I thought this was interesting, by the way. Cheerleading started as a male sport at the very end of the 19th century, according to the Huffington Post. In recent decades, it has been perceived as a sport with women only. They attribute that shift to the 1970s rise in popularity of the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. That's when it became very commonplace to have women as cheerleaders instead of men. But prior to that, it was mostly male cheerleaders. Back before you and I were watching sports on TV, we had no idea, right?
Right.
Some of the other celebrities who were male cheerleaders include not only Samuel L. Jackson, but the great actor Jimmy Stewart. Also, former presidents Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush were male cheerleaders. So, does that blow your mind? That just happened.
Yes. Can you see George W. Bush trying to get a cheer right? That would have been awesome.
He was a cheerleader at Yale. Ronald Reagan, a cheerleader at Illinois' Eureka College. So, apparently it didn't hurt those guys from going on and accomplishing whatever they wanted to in their life. But
they didn't let's be honest. They didn't spend their lives telling people they used to be male cheerleaders either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Maybe not. I don't know. I remember hearing about it from, you know, about George W. Bush. I don't know if it was something that he brought up, you know, but it was certainly in the bio. People knew about it. Let's talk to Jason. He'll be our first up on this at 1-800-520-1067. We're trying to shatter the myths behind male cheerleading. We've never talked about this on the show before, but we are fascinated with hearing what goes on. Hey, Jason.
What's up, party people?
You used to be a male cheerleader?
Yeah, and actually it was pretty awesome, man. I spent most of high school, the end of my senior year, hanging out with some of the most beautiful women in the school.
The cheerleaders. In other words, so you were the one who would throw them up in the air and catch them when they came down and be parts of the pyramids and all of that.
Exactly.
But you said hanging out with. That's not nailing.
I ended up hooking up with about half of the team at one point in time, because whenever we would go to parties, I was the only one who had a car at the time. And so I would be the one to drive everyone around.
Well, that helps.
So I end up taking them home. And the craziest thing, though, a lot of people don't understand, I played football for 4 years in high school. I got hurt maybe once or twice in cheerleading. I got 3 concussions, nearly broke my ankle, and had to go to the hospital twice.
What a giant pussy you are.
Were you playing football and being part of the cheerleading squad at the same time?
No.
That doesn't sound possible.
No. Well, only my senior year.
Well, I'm trying to do the math here, Kevin. How did he play football for 4 years and also spend a year and a half as a cheerleader in high school?
Did you cheer for other sports?
No. Just after football, the end of my senior year, then I was a cheerleader for the rest of the year because they need stronger guys for, like, when they go to competition.
All right,
also awesome.
Let me just challenge one of the statements that you said, is that you hooked up with about half the team. Weren't the cheerleaders interested in the jocks?
Yeah,
I mean, really?
For the most part.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're not hanging around going, hey, maybe I could meet a male cheerleader.
But maybe Jason had a little extra cred because he was a former football player. Maybe they knew him as a jock.
Could be.
That helped. And a lot of times I was just there.
Just there wins.
Just available. Exactly right. All right, Jason, thank you very much. I don't know. That's
a strange one, right?
It is. I don't know that's the type of thing that you lead with when you meet somebody is, hi, I'm Jason. I used to be a male cheerleader.
I don't think so. But the fact that he's there and that if they get to know him, they're not
right.
They don't have their defenses up.
Right. Right. Because he's part of the team. Right. Exactly. All right. Aaron, you hang on. Steve, Jose, Bill, a lot of male cheerleaders listening. We will talk to you coming up right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Robert Kirkman from Walking Dead coming up next hour. This time it is the Kevin and Bean Show on the world famous K-Rock.
Sounded like you were going to say something else there, didn't it?
It did.
Right now, we're talking about male cheerleaders. George W. Bush was one, as was Ronald Reagan. Samuel L. Jackson is the one that brought this thing to our attention again recently. And we're wanting to know what the deal is with the male cheerleaders. I don't know that I've known any in real life, but it's interesting to take your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Let's talk to Aaron.
Aaron is on line two.
All right.
I think he can shed some light on what's happening here. Hey, Aaron, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding on, too. What's going on?
Yo, what's up, party people?
Hi.
So there are two types of cheerleaders. There are the ones that are in the all-star system, and there are college cheerleaders. The all-star people are special, and the college cheerleaders are usually the big buff jocks that were in high school that end up going on to get scholarships and being around all the hot chicks looking up. Come on. Who isn't gay if you look up someone's skirt?
Okay.
Right, but my impression is that's as close as those guys can get to that.
Well, you don't poo where you eat, so no, you don't hook up with people on your team. But when you go to cheer camp and you go to nationals and competitions...
If you're not hooking up with female cheerleaders while you're a male cheerleader, you lose.
No, it's a total hookup fest at nationals. But no, you don't hook up with people on your team. It's
really? So not you don't do it with girls from your own school, only from other schools?
Yes, it's suicide hooking up with someone from your school.
Wow.
Okay.
A lot more drama than I expected in that. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Let's talk to Tony. He is a current male cheerleader, and he is on line one. Tony, what grade are you in, or what year in college, if that's the case? Hey, Tony.
I think I have.
What's going on?
Let me try one more thing. Tony, are you there?
Nope. We lost him. I guess we'll never know. Let's talk to Steve. He, like our first caller, Kevin, played football and did cheering. He did both. Let's find out what the deal is. Hey, Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up? Good morning.
You played football.
Yeah.
And then in the off season, you cheered.
Yeah, it was like a way to stay in shape and a way to have fun with all the cheerleaders and the football players because we were all friends. So we would hang out and... They needed like some muscle in
right.
In
I can only speak for myself, but if I played football, if I was a cheerleader, I would have gotten my ass kicked on a daily basis by the football players.
Well, what was the reaction from the other guys on the team, Steve?
We all agreed on it. We were like, hey, yeah, let's do it. Let's cheer. And I mean, it's not how it was before. Most of the guys who were gay. And they weren't cheerleaders. They were in color guards.
All right, so, fine. But you're saying the entire football team was fine with you being a cheerleader. I'm calling BS.
We were all football players, and we had fun. And like the previous caller at camps, and man, that was cool because we would hang out and then.
You're still a virgin, aren't you? Are you still a virgin, Steve?
No.
Honestly.
No, I've only had sex like 3 times.
That sounds about right. All right, Steve. Go Raiders. Thank you for the call. Let's talk to Jose. Let's just squeeze in one more because Jose is the gay guy who is the cheerleader, the one that you suspected was more common than apparently it is. Jose, okay. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good.
What do you guys want to know? I mean, any sport you guys get into – there's going to be gay people. There's going to be straight people.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I totally agree. But Kevin was under the perception, and I haven't really had any contact with male cheerleaders because I wasn't really involved in sports. Hard to believe. He was under the impression that male cheerleaders, by and large, were gay because why else would they be cheerleading? Our listeners have said otherwise. What do you say?
I think it's more that more are willing to come out than more are gay just because of the fact that, you know, it is cheerleading. Like, you have that, you know, just like, you know, in theater or any other, you know, gay fashion or, you know, gay extracurricular activities, I guess you'd say.
I guess my opinion is if you're athletic,
yeah,
gay or not, if you're athletic, you play the sport. If you can't play the sport, you're a cheerleader.
All right. For me, like, I actually was in other sports. I was in cross-country track and field up until the point I got into cheerleading, and I got into cheerleading kind of as a joke. Me and another friend of mine on the team had been joking all year about, oh, well, we're going to go to tryouts. We're going to go to tryouts.
Were you joking? Because was your conception, I'm sorry, was your
perception.
Your perception of that funny? You were going to do it to be funny, ironic?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, being in other sports, we always kind of, I mean, in high school, we kind of looked at the cheerleaders kind of like they couldn't run from one wall and back without huffing and puffing. And as
right.
I was doing 10 miles a day, so, I mean, it was kind of a joke the way their workouts were, but I actually got into it in college. And when I got into it there, the game was stepped up a little bit, and we were doing, you know,
I got into gymnastics and weightlifting. So I was
so you just did it basically for the camaraderie and also for the athleticism. It was just something that was fun for you.
I kind of walked onto the team because guys kind of get that privilege. You kind of because naturally you have better strength. You know, you're more you're more of a stunt kind of guy.
Right.
Or you help out with the stunts more. You kind of get to walk onto the team that way. So I went to try out.
But for you, it's no fun catching a girl that jumps into your arms, for God's sakes.
Hey, how do you know that? I had a lot of fun doing it, actually.
Oh. Well, not as fun as a non-gay guy, though.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Okay, all right.
But, I mean, and our team was kind of, we were mixed, we were co-ed. So I had, when I joined, we had about six guys, and half of them were gay, half of them were not. And I mean, like, I don't know about, you know, what the other guy was saying about, you know, college, the difference in college and all-star and all that, but I mean any cheerleading event you go to, it just kind of depends on each individual person, and
sure, yeah,
some of them get laid, some of them don't. It's just their personality.
It sounds like it was a lot of fun for you, a good experience too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But most of them don't get laid, right?
Then that's on them. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with cheerleading. I mean me, I've always managed to get some. I know guys that, you know, that were on the team that always managed to get some, and
all right,
some that just don't.
Yeah, Jose's a closer, man. He doesn't go home alone. So, yeah, it's that's job done.
So it's on you as a cheerleader to make it happen or not.
Yeah, it's on you as a person. I mean, I don't think it matters if you're a cheerleader or not. It comes down to whether or not you can close it.
Right on. All right, Jose, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for calling, dude. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, bye.
Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead, next hour here on The Kevin and Bean Show. And the RZA will be here in the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, he from the Wu-Tang Clan and behind the new Man with the Iron Fists movie.
So hey, you're not going to ask him to call you the BZA, are you?
I am the BZA.
I know, but you're not going to say that to him, right?
Absolutely. We're brothers, man. Come on. Oh. We're all part of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, no.
Hey, we call him Cousin Sal because he's Jimmy Kimmel's Cousin Sal, which makes him America's Cousin Sal, and he joins us every Friday on The Kevin and Bean Show. Sal, you and the team are going to be live in Brooklyn next week for the Jimmy Kimmel Live Show, back at home. What's that going to be like for you guys?
Yes. Well, you know what? I don't think it's going to be that good. I had high hopes, but now we're flying into, like, they're calling it Frankenstorm. It's supposed to be a hurricane.
It is. Yes, the worst weather since 1938 is happening as you guys are preparing to leave for your trip. It's not a good omen, is it?
Oh, we deserve it. We deserve it. I get to watch the Cowboys-Giants games with dozens of A-hole Giants fans in a sports bar somewhere. So
tell me what Jimmy has been like since the word came out that David Letterman is going to be one of your guests next week in Brooklyn, his childhood hero.
You know what? He's not even – he doesn't care. He's going to treat it like every other interview. He's a basket case, of course. He's you know, we had Michelle Obama on last night, and I don't even think that rates a three on him interviewing Letterman next week. But, yeah, we usually do a big Halloween show where everyone dresses up the band and Jimmy and everything, and it falls on the Letterman night Wednesday. And the producer's like, "All right, Jimmy, so what do you want to wear? What should he wear?" Jimmy's like, "Are you kidding me? I am not interviewing David Letterman in a costume." You can imagine.
By the way, it was very funny last night to have the first lady using an air horn getting Jimmy out of bed, running him all around the set last night. It was a very funny bit. You guys are just continuing to do great work over there. Cousin Sal writes about sports, of course, for thegrantland.com. You can follow him on Twitter at TheCousinSal, and every week he joins us to preview the NFL weekend. 2-1 last week, which seems to be about the norm for you, right, Sal?
Yeah, I think I've given you 5 out of 7 winning weeks. But, you know, I want to update my billion-dollar idea I had last week. Do you remember I told you about this?
Oh, right. We thought it was a million-dollar idea. You said billion.
Oh, no. Well, now it might not be worth anything, really. But a real quick recap.
Summarize
every
last
October,
week, right?
The NFL pays tribute to breast cancer awareness, and they go on like a cotton candy crusade. They turn everything on the football field pink.
Right.
Cleats, towels, Gatorade. It drives everyone crazy, a lot of fans, but it's touchy, so no one really talks about it. I do more than talk about it. I came up with an idea where the league and DirecTV get together with breast cancer awareness and color correct the fan screens depending on how much he or she donates. So the whole screen starts off pink, and as you donate, the pink goes away. And I shopped it around. I had no takers on this idea. I called DirecTV, and I spoke to some Chinese woman that had no idea what I was talking about. But not only is the NFL not interested in this idea, they've stepped it up in Candyland department. This week, the referees in the Jets-Dolphins game will be carrying pink flags. And I'm
really?
Not even joking about
Are
that.
You
yes.
kidding?
So when they throw... Really?
They are throwing pink flags. Really, just outfit these infractions with pink tutus around. What are we doing? What is going on?
Well, I think it's nice that they're paying that much attention to breast cancer awareness.
Yes. It is, but all right. Is this the right time when a 250-pound man launches his head into the helmet of another 250-pound man? We have to be reminded about this horrible female disease. Like,
yeah.
Can the coach throw a red challenge flag if they don't like the pink flag?
I don't know. It does seem like we've done enough. I'm with you there. All right, let's look ahead.
Speaking of the Jets, before I get the picks, did you see starting quarterback Mark Sanchez and Desperate Housewives star Eva Longoria? They're done. They split up.
They broke up.
That's what we understand, yes.
Right.
Vegas has a prop bet, 375,000 to 1, odds that backup quarterback Tim Tebow makes a sex tape with Eva Longoria.
Oh, that would be the best.
Those are good odds.
The odds are so long because Tebow is incredibly and fabulously and so flamingly into younger women, so it's just not going to happen.
That's funny. I've not heard that about him.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Drew Brees versus Peyton Manning. Saints over the Broncos. You say this weekend.
You know what? I'm going against my gut this week, guys, because there's a stat in the 93-year history of the NFL, and this is true. No team has given up as many yards through 7 weeks as the 2012 New Orleans Saints. 2012 is like this year. So I don't know why I like the Saints so much, but I feel like they're going to turn it around. They have, like, their second best coach back after suspension, Joe Vitt. I think it's going to be a great game, a Drew Brees, Peyton Manning shootout through the thin air in Denver. And I like the Saints, 31-30. Take the 6 points. I think six is too many.
You take nothing away from Drew Brees for doing that Pepsi commercial with One Direction. You're giving him a pass on that, right?
I really don't like that. I don't like it too much.
I don't like it either. All right. How about San Diego and Cleveland?
You know, this game could be quite possibly the losing coach could lose his job Monday morning. Like, North Turner for San Diego has been on the hot seat forever, and the Browns' new owner is already grumbling about changes. But the Browns are susceptible to the big play, and as mediocre as the Chargers have been, they're a big play team. I don't like the Browns' rookie quarterback playing catch-up, Brandon Weeden. It's not going to be his game. San Diego wins this one. Take the Chargers -3, 24-16 over the Browns.
And the third pick of the weekend from Cousin Sal is your beloved Dallas Cowboys, who have certainly been up and down all season long. They've got the Giants.
Yes, and I know I've been accused of betting with my heart, but I really think I have my finger on the barely beating pulse of my Cowboys this year. I think I'm 5-1 in picking their games this year. Bad news all week. Our top linebacker and toughest all-around player, Sean Lee, is out for the year. Our best male cheerleader fractured a cuticle in a pinky nail. It's sad. The spread opened to Cowboys -1, which is outrageous for anyone who watches football. It's now the Giants -2.5. It's really swung over the week. The Giants, of course, have revenge on their minds from opening night. That was a fluke. I'm not betting it, but I suggest you do. Take it before it gets to -3. It actually doesn't matter. It's -30, Cowboys 17. That's my third pick.
Wow. Cousin Sal has been 12-9 overall, 2-1 last week, 5 out of 7 winning weeks. So again, the Saints +6 over the Broncos, Chargers -3 over the Browns, Giants -2.5 over Cowboys. And real quick, Sal, I didn't see anyone in the media picking the Giants to win the World Series. It's been all Tigers. Now the Giants are up 2-0. What do you think as the series heads back to Detroit?
I think the Giants now, they've figured out Justin Verlander, and they're in the Tigers' head. I mean, that was the best pitcher. That was the guy who was going to pitch 3 times for the Tigers, a Cy Young Award winner. Once they got past that, it's going to be the Giants. I think they win this in 5, and they have their closer's name is Romo. Do you know how much it kills me for a guy named Romo closing games out for a team called the Giants?
Winning?
Yeah, it does. You can read Cousin Sal at grantland.com. Follow him on Twitter at @TheCousinSal. And don't miss him with his cousin Jimmy Kimmel next week. Late nights on ABC live from Brooklyn. Thanks, Sal. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
folks. We are going to talk Fringe coming up after the top of the hour with Joshua Jackson tonight at 9 on Fox. I know you guys are very excited. Am I just a lame-o that I never really got into Fringe?
Absolutely.
Does that make me a bad person?
No, a lot of other things make you a bad person, but I don't think this show's for you.
I don't think you're the kind of guy that would
too complicated?
No, not
too complicated.
Being like X-Files, being like Lost.
Yeah, maybe.
It's in that vein.
It was one of those shows that seemed so complicated that if I didn't get on it early, I feel like I was too far behind
already to begin with.
So, anyway, we love Joshua. We're very excited to have him back on the show. Then Robert Kirkman from The Walking Dead next hour as well. Plus, Ralph is here with the Showbiz Beat right now.
Glad Bean is considering whether to watch Fringe or not as it enters its twilight.
It's fifth season.
Yeah. It's final season. That's the thing that makes me sad as I watch it now. I'm like,
you know, the first Seinfeld.
I'm going to miss Peter.
Bean watched was the series finale. That was it. That was the first time.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
I'm a little late sometimes jumping on board.
But I thought you'd like to stay current.
First Frasier I ever saw was the finale, too, by the way. And I thought, this show's funny. Where have I been?
Wow, you're a mess.
Well, you are missing out.
Halloween parties are coming up this weekend.
None bigger than the 9th annual LACMA Muse Costume Ball. This one, however, is going to actually be on Halloween night. So you party all weekend, and then you still have another party to look forward to on Halloween night. This is an amazing event. LACMA, for those of you who don't know, is the L.A. County Museum of Art. And they do this ball. They have for the past 9 years, this costume ball. And usually it's got a theme. Last year it was the works of Tim Burton. This year it's another legendary filmmaker that they've chosen to honor. It is inspired by the work of Stanley Kubrick, the genius who brought you such films as 2001 Space Odyssey, The Shining, Clockwork Orange. I mean, this guy was just one of the best. Eyes Wide Shut, which in spite of Tom Cruise involvement, still was an exceptional film. If you'd like to go to this event, and why wouldn't you, it's not just a costume party, but it also features annotated scripts, set models, costumes, props, and more from the director Stanley Kubrick's career. So if you're a film fan, this would be the ultimate Halloween party for you. Here is the details. 21 and older, please, because it is a boozy event. If you'd like to attend, I have one pair of tickets available today. Let's make it caller number 9, since it is the 9th annual LACMA Muse Costume Ball. 1-800-520-1067 is the number to call. Hope you win. It's going to be fun. Speaking of legendary filmmakers, Kevin Smith and I will be doing our Hollywood Babylon this weekend. It is Halloween, not really Halloween themed, but if you want to wear a costume, you're more than welcome to. We'll have a prize for the best costume of the evening. I'll be dressing up. Kevin will be wearing a hockey jersey, so that's kind of dressing up. It's 8 p.m. at the Lovitz on City Walk, and then we're doing our Comic-Con Theater where we act out comic books at 10 o'clock. You can go to both shows at thelovitz.com for more details.
Do people stay for both? Are you clearing them out and then charging them again?
We got a twofer offer. You get a reduced price if you buy tickets to both shows.
All right.
I think it's $35 if you buy for both, and then you just stay. You just drink the whole night away with me. I told Smith, I said, it's a bad idea to have me try to read things after the first show, because I'm going to be S-faced, and then I have to read a comic book and act it out for
people.
Yeah,
but you're a funny drunk.
Yeah, but it's...
Actually makes you funnier.
But I have to stick to the script in the second show. While we're talking about movies, Conan the Barbarian, the reboot, not a very successful venture. They brought back Conan, and they had Jason Momoa play him. Famously, Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, was the original Conan in the films. Well, how about another Conan movie starring the Governator?
No.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is Conan the Octogenarian.
Really?
Well, they want to talk about Conan in his twilight years. The guy who owns the rights to the Conan film franchise says, here's the idea. The mythic character who has played the role of king, warrior, soldier, and mercenary, who has bedded more women than anyone, nearing the last cycle of his life. He knows he'll be going to Valhalla and wants to go out on a good battle. Think of this as Conan's Unforgiven.
No.
The final battle of Conan with Schwarzenegger?
Nope.
Could it happen?
Nope.
Oh, I broke a hip. He just lays down on a big fur rug. It's in the works. How about this? Are you ready? Could you accept? Would you be amenable to a black James Bond?
Sure.
Black Bond.
Sure.
James Blond.
I don't think they call him Blond because he's white.
Yeah. That's what people are speculating. Daniel Craig is still signed up for two more Bond films. After that, they may go with a new actor.
They change actors all the time in that, don't they? I mean, every three or four?
Been,
every three
know,
or four movies?
Six.
Has it been?
Six or seven Bonds.
Does that bug you? You're the big Bond fan.
No, I think it's great. Because they always do a good job. They always cast brilliantly, and they bring somebody in who does the role. Well, Timothy Dalton wasn't well, those films weren't really good.
Could have left him out.
He didn't really get a fair shake, because I thought he was pretty good, but the films were not strong. But let me see. You got Connery, Moore, Lazenby, I'm going to think of Dalton, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig. That's six. Six Bonds, right? Anyway, they're talking to Idris Elba.
I don't know who that is.
Producers.
Good
yes,
choice.
You do know who he is.
Okay. I know who that is.
You have seen him in... he's a... what would you have seen him in? Oh, you've seen him in Ghost Rider 2. He played the black priest who brings Johnny Blaze on board.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah. He's in a very successful British series in the UK called Luther.
Sure.
And he's been in a ton of films.
He's on The Office for a season.
Yeah, he played the manager of The Office.
The Wire, of course.
Very badass, talented British actor. And apparently he has had conversations with the Bond producers about potentially taking over the role.
I think the script and the directing is more important than the color of the dude's skin.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But would the majority of film fans accept a black actor in the role of Bond? I think that's. I think
guess
it would
yes.
be curious. I would guess yes too. I would like to guess yes.
Yeah.
But I think there were some people who would think it was weird. Or
look,
or
I think we'll have a black man elected president before there'll ever be a black James Bond. I mean, come on.
You're just talking science
reasonable.
Fiction, crazy person.
Oh, shit, here we go. It's on.
No, it's
race
not. It's not
war!
On. No, there's no race war.
Race war's on, everybody.
No, nope.
It's going down.
It's not
it's
going,
going
down.
Down.
It's fine.
Come on.
No, no, we're all good.
I think everything's good.
Everyone's happy. Jeez, he's always trying to start stuff. Today's celebrity birthday is John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite fame. He's 35 years old. Keith Urban turns 45. He's married to that Nicole Kidman.
He is.
Yeah.
He is. American Idol judge.
That's right. Kelly Rowan, from the OC, is 47 years old today. Natalie Merchant, formerly of 10,000 Maniacs, is 49. Tom Cavanaugh, very talented actor from Ed and Scrubs, 49. Carrie Elwes. From the Saw movies and Princess Bride turns 50. Dylan McDermott from The Practice is 51. Rita Wilson, wife of Tom Hanks and an actress and producer in her own right, is 56. Wheel of Fortune host Pat Sajak celebrates his 66th birthday today. And my buddy and sometime boss, writer, actor, genius Seth MacFarlane, man who brought us the feature film Ted and American Dad, but most famously perhaps Family Guy, is 39 years old today. We have a little Seth to celebrate.
They will clean up all your talking in a minute such as this. They will make you take a tinkle when you wanna take a p***.
And they'll make you call fellatio a trouser-friendly kiss.
They may just be neurotic or possibly psychotic. They're the fellas at the freaking FCC.
How ironic that in a song about the FCC, we had to bleep one of the words for the FCC.
Yeah, that they can use on TV, but we can't use on the radio.
It's a magical world.
Yep.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and this is the Kevin and Bean Show. At 7 minutes after 8 o'clock, we have Robert Kirkman from The Walking Dead coming up in about 10 minutes.
And the RZA next hour, too, talking about the Man with the Iron Fist movie. Can't wait for that. Michael Schwartzbach from West Hills, thanks for listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. You just won your passes for the 40th annual Halloween haunt at Knott's Scary Farm, plus front-of-the-line passes for all 13 mazes. We've got them for you again before the end of the show. Ralph,
now,
are you...
The Man with the Iron Fist.
Yes.
Is this a sequel to The Man with the Lubricated Fist?
That is
because
not...
I rented that one.
It's not, why would you...
No, I just don't know. I'm not familiar with the film. I just didn't know. I haven't seen
it's
that trailer.
It's a brand new thing.
Oh.
Brand
all right, how about a little less nonsense and a little more turning our attention toward Fox tonight, about 13 hours from right now at 9 o'clock. It's a new episode of Fringe, ladies and gentlemen. Could not be more excited, as we always are, to welcome back Joshua Jackson here to the Kevin and Bean Show. He is Peter Bishop, of course, on the show, now in its final season. Hi, Joshua.
Hi there. How's it going? How
good.
Am I supposed to follow Man with the Lubricated Fist?
If anyone can do it, Josh, it's you, my brother.
We apologize for the lead-in.
You know, we run the risk every time we talk about a TV show of everybody who doesn't watch the TV show not having any idea what we're talking about. When you talk about Fringe, that's challenging even for people who do watch.
I was about to say, you run the risk of people who even do watch the show having no clue what you're talking about.
Right, exactly.
Trust me, I try and describe, you know, when people say, oh, you work on a TV show, that's great. What's it about? You just get this blank look of like... Oh, boy, how long do you have?
Yeah. Okay. So there's this universe, right? And then there's this other universe, and then there was this bridge, but that bridge is closed now. So anyway, these bald guys came, and now they're taking over, and they don't like to breathe our air.
Girl, and she works for the FBI. But then she's in this universe because she falls in love with a guy, because she goes over to the other universe because he was snatched by his crazy father, who is the Secretary of Defense, except for when he's not, when he had his brain taken out. But then the bald guys came, and they told him that he was important, so he put him back in the place, but then that didn't happen because the other one was... Yeah.
And then you're in yellow goo, and then for some reason your daughter's the same age as you. I don't know.
The person you're talking to says, yeah, I'm going to go get an hors d'oeuvre now. Thanks so much for the chat.
Yeah.
They say, hey, thanks a lot.
Drink,
there's another show with two girls who work making cupcakes. I'll go watch that one instead.
Yeah, exactly.
I want you to be honest and tell us, have you understood personally everything that has gone on the show so far? Or are there some things that you just go, well, I'm sure they know what they're talking about. I sure don't.
There's been many a time where on reading, you read the script,
Well, the first one's usually embarrassment because you don't want to admit to anybody. It's like, well, I'm way too dumb to figure that out. And then you sort of get to say it and you talk around like, so you read the next one yet? Yeah, that's weird, the thing with the, you don't get that either, do you? And then you call it down to L.A. And then you have to pretend like, well, I was just wondering what it is that's going on because I can't figure it out anymore. Yeah, there's plenty of time. We have no idea what's going on. So this year has been better. This has been an easier year.
Yeah, you guys have kind of rebooted the plot line in the sense that it's a whole different feel to the show now. You guys are trying to figure out, to find the pieces, the tapes that Walter made in order to be able to repel this invasion that's taken over. And it feels like a different show almost, Josh. I mean that in the best sense, but Peter and Olivia...
One that's still canceled though, right, Ralph?
Oh, stop it.
How dare you?
Walter and Peter and Olivia have taken on sort of new roles. You guys are now warriors.
And we're the rebels. Yeah. I mean, I think part of the show's DNA is that it tries to reboot itself every year. And we've always tried to try something really different. But this year, the show is just much simpler because the alternate universe is not there. So you're not trying to tell two storylines at the same time. And instead of it being Olivia as this, you know, kick-ass FBI agent trying to investigate just what these cases are, now we're the rebels trying to fight off the bad guys, which is a much simpler, more digestible story, right? Have to beat back the invaders and save the world. That's pretty simple.
How long have the observers been in charge of the world between seasons, between season 4 and 5?
Between season 4 and 5, there's 26 years to pass while we're stuck in the amber. And so when we pick up at the beginning of season 5, the world is already, the war is over, basically. They've won, and we're just sort of managing our decline into a short and messy death.
With all the action and great storylines aside, the relationship between you and your daughter, really, I think the humanity of that is really what has drawn me in most this season.
Well, thank you. And I think when Fringe has worked its best, it's, you know, in season 1 and 2, it was this amazing Walter character and, you know, this crazy scientist at the center of this show. But it was him grappling with his humanity and making connections and having a family, basically, with his son and Olivia, who's not his blood daughter, but him trying to be a human again.
Right.
Against the backdrop of all this crazy sci-fi stuff. So this year, it's Peter and Olivia, the two least likely people to become parents, probably on the planet, maybe next to Walter, and their child confronted with the child that they lost all those years ago and now getting her back, and only in Fringeville is she now, you know, a hot 26-year-old.
Yeah, but yeah. Since you've been frozen in time, she's your age.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Which leads to some awkward conversations on set, but...
Yes, it does.
Which, as a parent myself, it makes me heartsick to know that you missed out on her childhood, and then you're confronted with having to deal with her as an adult, as an equal, as you guys fight off this invasion.
Except not even really even an equal. She's frankly knows more about what's going on.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought there was some, in the second episode particularly, there's some really interesting scenes between Olivia, who's always been this, you know, hyper-capable, sort of stoic warrior, now being in the secondary place where the daughter, the child, is like, no, that's not how things work here anymore. You have to take a step back and sort of learn from the master.
Right.
It's given an interesting sort of human center to the show for the fifth season.
But like a mom, Olivia taught her daughter how to be compassionate, and that made me tear up a little bit.
And how to be compassionate and also how to, you know, rediscover her humanity.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Bean, I just want to check with you, Bean. Is any of this making sense? Are we doing
it? You lost me right after. Please welcome Joshua Jackson to the show. I just love that Ralph is sitting at home on Friday nights crying over TV. I love the visual of that.
You know, this is your nap time. When I come on your shows on Friday morning, this is your time to go and just have a little peaceful moment.
Bean can go get some Earl Grey tea or something while we chat.
I always enjoy talking to Joshua. I am a fan of yours as well, sir. Hey, are you done filming? Is everything in the can for this show, for the season?
No, we're closing in, which is a bit surreal after 5 years to be so close to the end of the show. But we're halfway through the 9th episode and we're shooting 13 this year. So we're almost there, but not quite.
Does this seem like the kind of show, and I know they're very special experiences in television, where you have made friends that you'll stay in touch with for the rest of your life because of everything you guys have gone through together making Fringe?
Yeah. Well, you can't have an experience. It's, you know, the
being on a TV show for 5 years, you end up seeing the people you're working with more than the, you know, than your friends and family.
Right.
So the intensity of the experience can't be overstated. It's something I learned when I was on Dawson's Creek, and it's certainly the same thing up here. So you definitely, there are people that you carry forward. And for me, it's been the added, we shoot in Vancouver, and I'm from here, so I'm home for the first time in many, many years in my working life. So that part of it has actually, you know, having nothing to do with what goes on the screen, has actually been great.
You know what's worked for us is if there's somebody that annoys the group, they move to another city, and then you just have them shoot their parts from there. That's
exactly.
Worked for
and
us well.
And that's... I'm sorry, you're no longer part of the group. We have a one-way ticket for you. Enjoy.
That's right. Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Well, it is the final season of Fringe. Ralph, did you have anything else you wanted to ask? Because this may be the last time we talk to Mr. Jackson before it goes away.
It's bittersweet. For Fringe fans, and Josh, you know better than anybody how diehard we are regarding this show. We're loving the final season, but there is a sense of impending doom over every episode as we know we're creeping closer to the end. I'm assuming you guys have a big finale payoff in mind for us.
That's exciting to me, is the idea that you guys know that there's a wrap-up date and you're probably going to, you know, make a great episode to go out on.
But that's the hope. And we've talked about it a lot over the course of the last couple of years as the show. We were on the bubble for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So when they don't tell you towards the end of the season, guys would sort of gear the end of the year to either have a cliffhanger or be the end, which is not the right way to do it.
Right.
No. This year, because they know, right, all 13 episodes, there is no filler episode this year. They're all leading in the same direction, all getting us towards the end that Joel Wyman, our executive producer, wants to tell. So I think it's going to be pretty awesome. I hope that the dedicated Fringe fans who've been with us for 5 years also think that it's a proper wrap-up of the show. But it's a great opportunity.
That's going to be the thing we remember you for.
That kind
right
of stuff
there.
May fly in Canada, mister, but not in this country.
Yeah, exactly.
How about a little respect for the United States of America, huh?
Right, sir. That'll be on my permanent record. I'll be coming across the border now. They'll be like, actually, sorry.
You're a cursor.
You and your potty mouth. Not so much. All right, tonight at 9, the latest episode of Fringe in its final season on Fox. The brilliant acting from Anna Torv, who we've been lucky enough to have on the show recently as well. Joshua, of course, the great John Noble and Joshua Jackson, too. Congratulations on all the success of the show. Thanks so much for spending the time with us throughout the years. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Robert Kirkman, back in studio on The Kevin Beach Show, the creator of The Walking Dead. Hey, Mr. Kirkman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to see you. I asked earlier, and Kevin was afraid you might be listening and turn the car around and head home, but why do you need to promote The Walking Dead, the most successful drama in the history of basic cable?
I don't know. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to leave.
Thanks, Bean. I mean, it already couldn't get any bigger, but I guess maybe you'll sell some more books out of this, too.
I'm here to tell everyone to buy comic books. That is my sole mission today.
Oh, and you have a new one about the governor?
Yeah, I've got a new novel. We're doing a prequel series of novels about the origins of the governor, who is the new villain that is actually going to be introduced on Sunday night's
episode.
We need
him this week, right?
Yeah, and the second novel is called The Road to Woodbury, and it was in stores last Tuesday, I believe.
Beautiful. We had actor David Morrissey in with us a couple of weeks ago, and you can tell he has the intensity. Just as an actor, as a human, forget what he's doing on the show, but you can see he's the kind of guy who you would listen to what he had to say. He definitely has leader all over him.
Yeah, he's got a strong sense of authority, and one of my favorite things about the guy is he is also very, I want to say handsome and enchanting.
Right.
And so he can turn on that and just be like, hi, how are you? I'm actor David Morrissey. And then he goes into governor mode like in a split second, and I'm going to cut your head off.
He definitely has a switch he can flip.
Now,
right.
is it this Sunday as well where Carl gets bitten by a zombie and turns, and then Rick axes him in the head? And then
Well, Carl's gone!
You know what? You don't like Carl this season?
I want Carl to die.
Have you watched the episodes this season?
Carl is awesome this season. He risks the whole group by going off on his own.
He technically saved Herschel's life by going off on his own.
Herschel's a one-legged man. How long is he going to live?
Well, if Carl's around to protect him, it could be a while.
So Carl doesn't die Sunday?
I mean, yeah, he does, but, you know, it does. I don't want you to want him to die. I mean, come on, man.
Look, we lose this battle every week with Kevin. He has cartoon hate for Carl. I don't know how anyone can hate a little kid so much.
He's not a little kid. He's 27 this season.
Listen, I have two kids.
I do,
so
too.
If you just hate children, I understand that.
No, it's just him.
But,
only him.
You know, that's just mean.
I agree with you, Robert. Listen, imagine the circumstances, Kevin, of what he has seen in his young life. It's not going to turn him into...
He's a dick.
Like Robert said, he helped save Herschel's life. Doesn't he get a gold star for that at least? Don't you at least give him a pass for 1 week?
Yeah, this week that we're in now, and then Sunday.
And now he's gone.
Listen,
right,
the kid's going to learn kung fu. He's going to get a flamethrower.
Is that right?
I mean,
he's going to be the badass of all time.
By the end of the season, he's going to have a jetpack. You're going to love this guy. He is totally awesome.
I have a question for you that I'm certain you've been asked before, Robert, so please forgive me, but I'm curious about this. Because, you're of two minds right now, I would imagine, in that you've got the Walking Dead AMC.
He's got the Walking Head?
The Walking Dead AMC in this part of your head.
I rented Walking Head, by the way, last week.
And over here, you've got the Walking Dead that you're writing in the books and everything like that. Is it at all confusing to kind of have two parallel but different storylines going on at the same time?
It's somewhat unusual, and it has gotten to a point where when I'm writing the comic book series, I do hear the actors' voices in my head, from time to time, and that's a little, weird, because that didn't happen before the TV show existed.
But, sure, sure.
You know, the comic book has been around for almost a decade, and, The Walking Dead is about, how these characters grow and change over time, and so much more time has passed in the comic book series that they're really different characters, and most of them are dead, so they die quite a bit. So
Carl?
The comic book has almost an entirely different cast. No, Carl is still alive.
Okay, I'm just asking. what was it like for when Glenn gets killed in the comic book? What was that like for the actor, Stephen Young, who plays him? Was he concerned that maybe was foretelling where you were going?
I have to say, spoiler alert, please turn off your ears if you didn't know about that. Just go back in time.
Wait, you're saying spoiler alert for before Bean?
Man, there might be comic book fans listening to this that don't know that already
if
happened.
If they haven't picked up issue 100 yet, then it's on them.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, see, now I feel silly. But, Stephen Young had a big reaction to that. It was quite a bit of fun. He wrote a letter into the book, and we printed it, and I made fun of him in the response, and we had a good time with it. It was actually an awkward thing, because that's the first time I've killed someone in the comic book who was currently being played by an actor in the show.
Yeah, that's
so,
a lot.
So it was a little weird. Plus, it's an extremely gruesome death. And so when I was writing it, I was like, should I call Steven? Because I don't want him to think this is personal. Like, this is just weird. Like, I've never...
Dies so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a shame.
Last week's episode, and this is the voice of Robert Kirkman, the creator of The Walking Dead. We're talking about Walking Dead AMC, which, of course, is Sunday nights at 9 on that channel. Like, there's somebody who doesn't know that. Last week's episode was so fascinating to see new people who don't know anything about zombies, how to live with them, and how to kill them. That was so fun to get an outsider perspective on the world that we all have kind of gotten used to over the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun throwing these new elements into the mix. I mean, those guys have...
That's all right.
Sorry.
The prison has gone downhill.
Okay.
It's all right.
I've been doing a lot of podcasts.
We're good.
So anyway...
By the way, you're our second guest in a half an hour to try to get the S word on the air. Joshua Jackson from Fringe did the exact same thing a few minutes ago.
I will be better.
It was
What's
accurate,
happening?
Though? What you said was accurate. It has gone to hell, is what you meant.
I am now terrified to speak.
All right, we need to take a break anyway. So we're going to take a break. Robert Kirkman is here. The show, of course, is The Walking Dead. The comic is The Road to Woodbury. Is it a comic or is it a graphic novel?
It is a prose novel.
A prose novel?
With no pictures, unfortunately.
There what? How are you going to get Kevin to read it now?
I know.
How dare you?
Walking Dead is what we're talking about. The show on AMC airs Sunday nights at 9, and then right after that, our friend Chris Hardwick hosts The Talking Dead. We have him on every Monday here on The Kevin Bean Show to recap the episode before, with a lot of spoiler alerts. Robert Kirkman, the creator of the whole thing, is in studio with us right now. How you doing, Bob? You hanging in there, all right? You all right?
I'm doing great. I'm having a good time.
Good. I saw a piece on the show in Rolling Stone recently, and I guess they were talking to Glenn Mazzara, your showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
Who seems like a great dude, and he said, man, we're so glad to finally get to this point in where we are on the TV show, because everything so far has been kind of laying the groundwork for the real story that we want to tell that's happening this season. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, we really feel like we're getting to the good stuff. I mean, the storyline involving the prison and the town Woodbury and the governor, which again is being introduced this Sunday night, and Michonne, these new characters that are thrown into the mix, really have become, the heart and soul of The Walking Dead in the comic book series, and they're really fan favorites, and it's important stuff. And so now that we're finally getting to this stuff in the show, we're really excited to kind of expand the world and do things that you've never seen on the show, despite the fact that we've already been around for two seasons.
It's funny because most shows, you think they've got one season in them. If they're good, maybe a second season. This is really just
You're at the very beginning of telling this story.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about the fact that, you know, this show is going to evolve. You know, we're not a show where it's like, hey, you like this thing where guys run around in the woods and kill zombies. We're going to do that for 10 seasons and hope you never get sick of it. I mean, right. You know, we're going to be doing new things and telling new stories, and I think people are going to be surprised with the direction that we go this season.
Yeah, it's not, and this is what we tell people all the time. Like my wife, you know, she, like, zombies? No. And I'm like, it's not about zombies. It's about surviving. That's what it's about. It's about the new world after whatever the thing is that destroys the world as we know it. That's what's fascinating, to see these characters and how they react and how they rebuild society. What do we know about Michonne? What do we know, those of us who are just watching the TV show, not the history and the comic books, what do we know about her so far?
Absolutely nothing. She's awesome. She's very quiet. She is, you know, out in the woods with Andrea. She's been protecting her over the winter. They've been protecting each other. Lori Holden would want me to say that. They've grown tremendously close. And she's awesome. Has a samurai sword. And
we know she's a badass.
Yes.
And then she has two zombies on chains without
awesome
arms
pets.
Or a jaw.
Yep. Yeah, we're keeping her pretty mysterious. I think that's a really cool way to go. And we'll kind of, you know, tell stories about her and reveal more and more about her as the season progresses.
There's more of her this week.
Yes.
I think from the trailer, yeah.
Listen, I don't want to spoil anything, but I will say that this episode focuses exclusively on Andrea Michonne and introducing the governor. So there's
wow.
a lot of that cool stuff.
Awesome.
Nice. Now, I assume at some point we're headed toward all the various storylines kind of coming together. I mean, at some point Michonne and Rick meet, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what this season is about. It's about setting up these two communities, everybody living in the prison, everybody living in Woodbury, and really just kind of, you know, building towards this, you know, epic clash between those two groups, between Rick's group and the governor's group, between Rick's leadership and the governor's leadership, and, you know, seeing how these groups of humans, you know, how they interact and how they may possibly do battle.
Right. I've been seeing the ads during at least The Talking Dead for the official Walking Dead Halloween costumes. What do you think of those? They look good?
I think they're fantastic. I'm going to wear them. I'm going to wear all
you
of
get,
them.
You get money for them, don't you?
I don't know. Probably not.
You're just hedging your bets in case you do?
I mean, if AMC is listening, I'm not getting any money now.
Yeah.
You can't have imagined when you were creating this universe and you were, you know, writing them down in the novels and everything. You can't have imagined what it would turn into with the TV show and with the, you know, the mazes and the theme park and everything else that's going along with it and the merchandise. I mean, this must still be crazy for you every day how big it is.
Yeah, look, I only ever wanted to tell my stories and be able to buy groceries. So, you know, everything after that is a tremendous bonus, and I feel very fortunate. But, yeah, it's just absolutely shocking and surprising to see it, you know, getting to this.
What more can you tell us about The Road to Woodbury?
You know, it's a cool novel that tells more of the backstory of the governor. You find out, you know, how he founded Woodbury, how he established his leadership there. And
is that stuff we're going to see on the TV show in a briefer
version?
We'll see
some form of it, yeah.
But this explains it a lot more and kind of goes into depth.
Yeah, it's cool because it's a novel series. And like in the comic book and even in the TV show, we haven't really been able to go into the depth of character that we're able to do in these novels. And
right.
So, you know, you get to really get to the heart of who the governor is in a really meaningful way.
You have like six other things going on, right? I mean, other...
I do a bunch of other comics. I got other things going on. I do a comic book called Invincible. I do a children's comic called Super Dinosaur. That's about a 9-foot Tyrannosaurus Rex with robotic arms that shoots missiles. And, you know, I'm all over the place. I got to keep myself sane. If I just did zombies all day long, I would be depressing.
Why don't you get like 30,000 Chinese in a factory to start doing the work for you? You can just direct them.
Because I'm not a horrible human being.
Run it like Apple runs the iPod factories. I'm just saying, you just point and they draw.
Oh, wait, Apple does it? Then it's okay. Sorry. I love my iPods.
You're not horrible if Apple does it.
Yeah.
Sunday nights at 9 on AMC, we are into season 3 of The Walking Dead, and it is really, really getting good. I mean, every episode, and I'm not just saying this because you're in the room, we talk about this all the time when we come in. Every episode, you go, that was the best episode ever. Like, how is this possible? You must just be so proud to see what they're doing with it.
Yeah, look, I mean, our team on the show is absolutely phenomenal. Glenn Mazzara and the team of writers, all of our actors, the cast, the crew, everybody is doing just phenomenal work, and we really are extremely proud of this season, and we think it's going to be the best season yet.
I'm sorry to see Carl go. I got to be honest.
Next episode, Carl loses his head.
Kevin, you have to get on the show, and you have to be the one that kills Carl. That's all there is to it.
No.
I mean, I don't need myself to kill Carl. I just need someone to.
Just someone. Anyone.
That's all.
Saturday nights at 9 on AMC. And please, Mr. Kirkman, you have a website that people can go to and catch up with all the various comics and everything you have available?
Yeah, you can go to skybound.com and find out everything about Walking Dead, Invincible, Super Dinosaur, Thief of Thieves, all kinds of stuff.
Fantastic. Always great to see you, man. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks a lot.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:50. No, I'm not saying it now.
Kevin and Bizza, come on.
Kevin and Bean Show.
Kevin and Bizza. My woo brother Rizza joins us after the top of the hour here on the Kevin and Bean Bizza Show. Right now it's 8:53. Time for the Showbiz Beat. Here's Rob.
A listener tweeted me saying that Kevin's Wu-Tang name should be Drunk Face Killer.
Perfect. Perfect.
That's funny.
That made me laugh.
So many reasons.
Hey, listen, it's Halloween. And by the way, yes, you're right. We have not heard Halloween spooks today.
You don't have time. We have Walking Dead. We got RZA coming in. Come on.
Too busy. I tried, too but much then Dave show. Had to do his stupid thing.
You're too busy? Oh.
Stop it.
I'm just saying, no Halloween spooks. It's the Friday before
I know. It's
the
holiday
party
I
weekend.
Agree.
You don't
I agree.
Agree. You don't freaking agree, or you'd be playing it.
Halloween spooks behind my... outside my window.
Oh.
Halloween spooks behind a tree.
So cute.
So cute.
So cute, right?
If that's the one we played, I'd be happy.
Anyway, if you want to party and celebrate Halloween the right way, unlike Bean, then you should head out to Six Flags for Six Flags Fright Fest at Six Flags Magic Mountain. Their Fright Fest is better than ever this year. It's got new mazes, scare zones, and even more haunted attractions. Presented by Snickers, and I find it hard to believe that something so wonderful as Snickers could present something so terrifying as Six Flags Magic Mountain Fright Fest. If you'd like to go, I've got some tickets to give you right now. 1-800-520-1067 is the number to call. 5 winners. The first 5 people who get through will get a pair of passes to Six Flags Magic Mountain's Fright Fest. I'm not good at those things.
You're not?
I'm not good at the haunted houses, the mazes where people jump out at me and stuff.
Is it the jumping out that you hate?
Yeah, yeah. I don't like it. It's not a fun experience for me. It just makes me angry and makes me lash out at these people.
Maybe you should drink before you go.
That would be a worse idea because then there would be a lawsuit in the offing, and who needs that? Really?
He was a pussy.
Wow.
Ralph is a pussy.
I don't know if that was necessary. Hey, here's great news. Adam Sandler's next movie's in the works.
They're letting him make another one?
Oh, yeah. It is,
what, after That's My Boy, he gets to go back and do more?
That's My Boy. What about Jack and Jill?
And Jack and Jill, the 1-2 punch.
Apparently, he doesn't have enough Razzies on his mantle, so he wants to crank out another one. This one, he's announced, is going to be a parody of the classic Western, The Magnificent Seven. Wait for it. Wait. You're going to die.
I hope he plays more than one character.
It's going to be called The Ridiculous Six. Hello?
Where's the outrage there?
This is
Hello?
Not.
Is this thing on?
This is not a. This is. They're not sold on this, are they? This is just brainstorming.
Adam will star in it, produce the film, and is in the middle of writing it. It's his next project. He has announced a Western parody. Parody of Westerns. Thank God. Thank God, because it's about time someone did a parody of Western films.
Somebody took on that genre.
I think Mel Brooks should go over to his house, knock on the door, and when he has to just punch him in the face and walk away. Done that. It's called Blazing Saddles. All right. Okay. It gets better. It gets better. A new movie in the works with Tom Cruise. His next film may be a science fiction adventure about a man who travels back in time to face the younger version of himself.
Well, that's never been done before.
That's finally
a completely
someone
fresh idea.
He's going to do a time travel movie where an older version of someone self meets a younger version.
That's still in the theaters.
Ralph, no one remembers Looper from way back in September. Come on.
Our Name is Adam will be the title of the film.
This movie does look good.
No, it doesn't, Dean. Stop saying that. An astronaut who travels back in time to work with a younger version of himself. See? See how see what they've done there? What's going on? What's going on with show business?
I want a good movie.
You see the man with the iron fist. That looks like a good movie.
That does look like a great movie.
Yeah. We're talking to Riz in just a little bit. Let me get to today's celebrity birthdays. John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite, 35 years old today. Seth MacFarlane, my good friend, my sometime boss, occasional lover. You know, whatever it takes.
Whatever's needed at the
he
moment.
He is 39 years old today.
Hey, Ralph.
Yes.
Yes.
Obviously, you won't say anything if you're not allowed to, but does Seth know what he wants to do in terms of a movie next? Now that he's had such huge success with Ted, I imagine he's got a blank check for whatever he wants to do next.
Well,
is that a project?
Universal is pushing him hard for Ted 2.
Ted 2?
That is going to happen. I believe they would like it sooner than later. I'm not sure if Seth is going to make that his next project or not, but I know...
But he's a guy who will have other movies, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. He enjoyed the process enormously of directing, and obviously with the success of Ted, he can pretty
did
much...
Did he enjoy my work in Ted?
He didn't so much. Oh. He told me he didn't really enjoy working with you.
Hmm.
For those of you who don't know, of course, Kevin played the bear's stuffed ass. See him wiggling his little tail in that film.
It's not true.
Keith Urban's 45 years old today. Kelly Rowan from The O.C. is 47. Natalie Merchant turns 49 today. Tom Cavanaugh from Ed and Scrubs. He's a funny guy. Talented actor. 49 years old. Carrie Elwes from Saw and The Princess Bride is 50. Dylan McDermott celebrates his 51st birthday today. Rita Wilson, who is the wife of actor Tom Hanks, but a very talented producer and actress herself. She's 56. And Pat Sajak from Wheel of Fortune.
That's how it goes.
I was in Vegas last weekend playing the Wheel of Fortune machines. That tune will stick in your head when you're laying down, when you're drunk, laying down in bed, and you're trying to pass. All you hear in your head is...
You don't even have to stop and play. You can hear it as you walk by in the casino.
He is Pat Sajak, 66 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show.
I'm the RZA from the almighty Wu-Tang Clan. Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to sweat. And director of the new film, The Man with the Iron Fist. Music and film have the same wavelength, you know what I mean? A lot of people may have not comprehended that, but I'm one of the kids that did comprehend it. It all activates in the same, you know, model. When I was making Wu-Tang albums, I was actually trying to make a movie. So when you listen to it, you was like, Cuban Links, you felt like you was absolutely getting a movie in your head.
Right.
So now that, you know, I kind of rose above that, I'm making physical movies now with hip-hop music sound, you know, as a backdrop to it.
I'm the baddest man alive.
Not bad, beating bad, but I'm bad, beating good. Say my name 3 times and you knock on wood. Candyman hooks, I terrorize your hood. Flashing max on the cop, the way a gangster should.
You got the king, ruler, zigzag, zigalaw, commonly known to y'all as the RZA.
As we have been saying our whole lives, Kevin, you can't spell Kung Fu without F and U. And the movie is finally here a week from today. It's called The Man with the Iron Fist, and the genius behind it is in our studio. The RZA joins us right now on the Kevin and Bean Show. How are you, Mr. Zah?
All good, all good.
Is it Mr. Zah?
Mr. Zah. I like that.
Hey, it's so great to finally have you in our studio. We've been fans of yours and so many of the things that you've done for so long. So welcome to K-Rock, first of all.
Oh, man, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I feel like this Man with the Iron Fist, from what little I do know about you, is probably something that you've been working toward, like with all the various things you've done in music and film and acting and everything else over the years. This is the project you've been working for probably for decades, and it's finally here, right?
Yeah, this thing could have, I say, started as a dream, walking through Staten Island, cutting school and dreaming about it, and now I'm here to attest that dreams can come true.
Yeah.
Now, you've always been a fan of the martial arts type movies, Kung Fu and all that?
Yeah, I saw my first martial art film at the age of 9, Bruce Lee, Jim Kelly double feature. And I was addicted ever since
then. That was it.
That was it. Sold.
We had a guy on the show earlier in the week who is a zombie movie aficionado, and he has written a book about 400 different zombie movies. And I suspect that there are thousands of kung fu movies. How many are really, really good, though, and something exceptional, and how many of them are just kind of generic?
You know, there are thousands. But I would say there's probably about 50 core good ones that, you know, and you know, maybe each decade gave us 10 good ones, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they are, I got 1,000 of them, man.
You do?
Yeah. And it's only about, like I said, about maybe 50 of them that, you know, that you could show to anybody and they'll realize it's a good film.
Yeah. And what did you think that you could bring to the genre of kung fu movies that hadn't been seen before?
Well, most of these movies are made from an Asian sensibility, you know what I mean? And they, you know, subtitled or dubbed. This is made from an American sensibility with a Hollywood aspect and taste. So I looked at the pros and cons of those films, and I think I found the way to make it that the American audience will enjoy it fresh, and the Asian audience will appreciate it as well. Kill Bill was done by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And he's my mentor. And when he made that movie, that was a martial art movie.
Yeah.
But it was just a great film, take out the martial
Absolutely.
Art. So my idea was to do the same thing. And Quentin actually saw the movie, and he told me, and I was so proud when he said this, he was like, you've captured all the elements of the classic kung fu movies, but you've brought the opulence of the modern.
Was that ever a daunting idea, which is there have been hundreds of this genre.
Hundreds.
How do you come in and bring something fresh and step it up?
Well, see...
Was that daunting at any point?
It was daunting. It was daunting, but when me and Eli Roth wrote the screenplay, we spent a year and a half creating this world called Jungle Village. And we would watch movies like Star Wars and see how George Lucas created his whole world. The women in the movie, because it takes place in a brothel with all these sexy women. And... You know, I'll watch movies like Gypsy and realize that, you know.
But you don't tell your friends in the hood that you're watching Gypsy.
No, shh. I'm on K-Rock. I'm going to get away with it.
Okay. They'll never hear this.
But, you know, as a cinema foul, though, you got to study all types of film. And we made sure that we made a movie that, you know, that does not have fight fatigue. No, Eli, I would make him watch all these other kung fu movies that he haven't seen, and he'd be like, oh, man, this is another fight. So he's like, well, in our movie, we'll make each fight so different that you never get fatigue. Yeah, so we brought in Dave Bautista, the wrestling champion.
Right.
We brought in Kung Lee from the UFC, Rick Yuen with Taekwondo, and brought in the gladiator himself, Russell Crowe, to just go Maximus on it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Now, I read someplace that when you first talked to Russell Crowe about being in this movie, he was an American Gangster, right?
Yeah.
With you. He wasn't a big fan of doing a kung fu movie. It wasn't something he wanted to do, but he liked you.
Yeah.
So he said, yeah.
He was very reluctant to do the part. This is because he's a serious actor, man. One of the best actors in the world.
Right.
And this is a total thing when you act like you're throwing a weapon and nothing's going to happen.
Right.
You know what I mean? We got to cut and insert. But he trusted me as an artist. And it took him about 2 years for that trust, though. You know,
is that right?
Yeah, because you know, I gave him a script one time. And he was like, "Yeah, Bobby, sure, yeah." But then, on the set of the next 3 days, he had got a chance to read my book, The Tao of Wu. And I think it was after reading that book, he realized that wait, this is not just a rapper, actor guy. This guy is really a man of art and has a strong brain on his head. And so he called me over and said, "Bobby, why do you want me in this film? Why me?" And I said, look, I got a character in here called Jackknife. He's a badass, all right? I'm going to make him the most coolest knife in the world, better than a Rambo knife.
Right.
And I need the right man to hold it and to not bring kung fu skill, but to bring pure Hollywood acting ability. Don't worry about the muscles in this movie. I got enough muscles from all the Asian brothers, you know
right.
what I mean? I just need somebody that could bring that Hollywood quality.
Has that gravitas?
Yeah. And he did. And Lucy Liu came on last.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, and I almost couldn't get her. And she told me the other day.
What was her reluctance?
Well, same thing. You know, these are A-list professionals who don't like to be played around with.
Right.
But when she talked to me about it and I explained to her the role, this was through Skype, and she was like, you know, it sounds like you know what you're doing, and I'm going to take a shot with it. And she came over, and she really enjoyed herself. And those two would add another level of magic to this film.
Absolutely. What was it, even with those guys on board, was it a tough film to sell to Hollywood? Because they, you know, not a lot of kung fu movies make money, and that's what they're primarily interested in. Did you have trouble getting someone to sign off on it?
Well, I actually didn't have trouble. We came in for a modest budget. You know, I wasn't reaching for the stars with it. And look, to me, I think it's also a twist of fate. Right now, Universal have a team of executives that I think they understand marketing, you know, and marketability.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the chairman of Universal telling me that he's watched my career, actually, from a side note. And he's seen that whatever I put my mind to, I have delivered on.
Right.
And he saw the passion in me. You know, he says, I see your passion for this project, and I'm going to give you that shot. And the producers as well, they all was like, you know, this is an untested director, but he sees his vision so clear. And you go back and you check my history with Wu-Tang Clan and mm-hmm. on my albums, you know, people would thought that it wouldn't sell. Like a lot of the big executives at that time, like, oh, this is not going to work. Trust us. It's too core. It's hardcore. I said, listen, man, I got a vision.
Right.
And when Steve Rifkin believed into the vision, you know, he made a small investment. and the returns was ridiculous.
Did they try to meddle along the way? Did they watch you closely because you're untested and...
Well, actually, no. It was actually the opposite.
It was the opposite. They let you go. Yeah, do your thing.
There was a beautiful lady there named, if I could say her name on the radio, named Donna Langley.
Mm-hmm.
And when she gave us the green light, she said to me, we'll see you at the premiere. And I was like, thank you.
That's it?
She said, do you know what that means? I said, no, I don't know what that means. She said, well, that means that we're going to let you make your film.
What a rare Hollywood story you have.
Well,
how about that?
Yeah, I didn't know it was rare. That's
it's
another
rare.
Thing. I'm naive. I am naive to things. But I wasn't, I was just say this to you. You know, over the years of studying with Quentin Tarantino, I was allowed to be on his set. So I met people like Larry McCauley, one of the greatest DPs in the business. And I've picked his brain for, you know, how to work with Steadicams and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I met Greg Nicotero and Howard Berger, the guys who do the Walking Dead special makeup. Mm-hmm. And I met them on Death Proof, and I was like, when I do my film, I want you guys to help make my film, you know, do the blood for me, because I don't want to use CGI. I want it practical. And when we got the green light, I went to the good people like this, and I brought in the best, you know, my production designer. He worked on Expendables, and he worked on Pirates of Caribbean. And, you know, Ridley Scott, who worked with me on American Gangster, he was rooting for me. And he sent over an editor for me. And Tony Scott sent his production designer. He was like, yeah, this is the guy that could really help bring this vision to life. So they knew that.
You got all-stars, man. You got a team of all-stars.
Team of all-stars.
Yeah. Well, you were, like I said when we sat down, you've been preparing for this movie your whole life. And you made a lot of great choices. And your baby is finally going to be born next Friday in theaters, November 2nd. It's called The Man with the Iron Fist. Our guest is RZA. He is in studio with us here on The Kevin Bean Show. Much more right after this on K-Rock.
Hello, Los Angeles. Do you want to play a game?
The world famous K-Rock.
If it's Halloween, it must be Kevin and Bean.
It is the world famous K-Rock. RZA is in studio with us talking about The Man with the Iron Fists.
I feel like a little bit of cool is rubbing off on us. I feel like this show is almost hip right now.
Nope.
Kevin and BZA, come on.
Nope.
Kevin and BZA.
Nope. We've never been more dorky and white than we are right this second.
RZA, tell everybody, and it'll sound like you're bragging, but you're not. Tell everybody what you did on The Man with the Iron Fist. What are you responsible for?
Well, I made the story up.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And then I spent a year and a half with my buddy Eli Roth writing the screenplay.
Okay.
Right.
Then we went and... I'm hired as a director. I've directed the film.
All right.
Okay.
I also have a starring role in the film as the blacksmith.
Uh-huh. Right.
Right.
And then when I thought everything was over.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Yeah, I'm bored, you know, in the editing room. They're like, okay, of course you're going to score the film as well.
Now, I read that and I was like, how is that a surprise at that point in the process that you didn't have an idea either that you wanted to do it or that they wanted you to do it?
Because I listen, man, that's
you're
a lot
just busy
of,
doing everything.
Yeah,
else.
I had a lot of work. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's like, I ate already. hold on, have some more dessert, kid.
So they came to you and said, you're going to score it. And you said,
yeah, I kind of rebelled against it because I was too close to it, I thought, you know? And so I complained to Eli, you know, one of the producers, and he's like, Bobby, yeah, you're going to score this thing, of course. So I said, oh, no, okay, I'm going to go to Quentin. I thought I'd go to the higher, right?
Right.
I'm like, Quentin, look, man. I'm really
give me a pass.
And they want me to score this thing. He was like, of course you're going to score it, Bobby. Who else is going to score it?
So every step of the way, you're like, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah, after that one.
You got to do it all.
Tell us about putting that together. Tell us about getting a group like the Black Keys to – that was a great song, great video.
Thanks, yo. I met Dan and Pat on the Black Rock Project, and my music supervisors actually took parts of the film to them in Nashville, let them see it, and said – you know, you guys had cut some songs together, and there's a song, The Baddest Man Alive, that would fit right into the film. Would you guys go mix it and make it, you know, a proper song and put it in the film? And they saw some of the footage, and they loved it, and they was like, oh, we'd love to be a part of it.
That's great.
Well, it's a hilarious video. We've got it up at krock.com if you haven't seen it yet. It's the funniest food fight you'll ever see in a video. You strike me as a guy, when you were talking about the movies that you watch to prepare, your whole life, really, to get to the point, to be conversant in all kinds of movies, you strike to me as the same way with music, too. I bet you listen to everything, and you take something away from everything, no matter how crazy or how far off it is from the music that you like best.
That's true. You know, I appreciate things for what they are. I don't put things into a box. You know, I'm in my house playing Lenny Cohen, and, you know, my wife's like, Bobby, I said, listen, the song The Stranger is a great song, baby. Let's listen to the lyrics. And I started telling her the lyrics, and she started getting, oh, yes. It has some kind of, like, lyrical hip-hop thing to it. And not Lenny Cohen, it's not hip-hop. But he's a great songwriter, you know? Mm-hmm. When I was working on The Man with the Iron Fist, and I'm a little shy to say this, but I'm going to say it. I'm working on The Man with the Iron Fist. I was in China for 150 days, and my family didn't come over. So I was real lonely. And my favorite song was Elton John's Rocket Man.
Really?
Because I felt like I'm gone, baby. And I'm just,
yeah.
It's going to be a long time. I love the earth. I love my wife. I was like, I was saying.
Did you cry when you listened to it? Be honest.
Almost. Almost. It almost hit that little glob spot in my right here. You know that spot you got here underneath your heart?
Sure.
We'll never have enough time to ask all the questions we have in the time that we have, Rosa. But tell me, take
can
me
we call
back
you
to
Bobby? Because you keep referring to yourself as Bobby.
Sure, come on.
Which do you prefer?
Well, my friends call me Bobby. You guys, are we buddies now?
Well, I would hope, but I don't know what your perception is.
hey, Bean, are we clean, baby?
I think so. I think so, yeah.
So Bobby it is.
Tell me back, take me back to how you started making beats. Like, when did that become a thing that you knew that you could do?
Well, actually, I started off as an MC, and then I would sell newspapers on the Verrazano Bridge in New York. And we saved enough money to buy some turntables. And then we started DJing. And once we got into the store, you know, when you buy turntables, they had a rhythm machine. So I saved up money and got me a rhythm machine.
Right.
And it kept going, it kept going.
You sort of teach yourself how to do both?
Yeah, I taught myself, yo. I don't, you know, I didn't have to read the manuals or nothing. I'm a little geek, you know, actually. I grew up in the hood, and I grew up with all this gangster virus and all this type of things. I'm a type of guy that has nerd qualities about him. And so I would spend...
You wouldn't strike me as nerd, but okay.
I spend hours on electronics. I take it apart. I play with it. And eventually, a sampler was invented. And once they made the sampler, that was my instrument. And I started just taking all songs. Like, I take a Peter Pan song with a Tanya Gardner song with an AC/DC off the Back in Black album and Billy Squier snare, merge all that together and have me a hardcore beat.
Yeah.
And you were...
What age was that? I'm sorry, B.
My first beat probably started at 12, 13.
12 or 13.
And I got good at doing it probably around 16.
And now you do beats for lots of people, friends like Jay-Z and Kanye and people like that. I mean, you're involved in a lot of other people's records still, right?
Yeah, definitely. And Kanye is actually on the soundtrack, and he has a song in the movie.
Yeah. And White Dress, right?
Yeah, White Dress. He came to the editing room, and we watched the scene with all the pretty girls. You got to see this, all the pretty girls in the tub. And he saw
it. If I have to see it, I will.
He was like, yo. And he wrote a song for it, and that was fun.
Are you still as passionate about music as you were, or has that kind of taken a back seat now because of the film work?
No. Music is like hobby, second nature. I play music every day. I sit on the guitar. When I get home, I'm going to sit on the guitar for an hour and just play the guitar to entertain myself and my wife.
You know, is Wu-Tang still forever?
Wu-Tang is forever. You know, now I think that we're able to take it to the film world. I like to say from mixtapes to movies.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what's the status of the group right now?
Well, the entire Wu-Tang Clan do appear on the soundtrack. And that's the first time we all appeared on one product in years. So I'm happy that they all participated with The Man with the Iron Fist. And we talked about potentially next year, the 20th anniversary, maybe coming together and doing some shows. Maybe do something like Coachella or Lollapalooza and go back out one more time.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
And just have one more big blast out there.
You got too many guys in that band, though, right?
Hey, yo.
That's a lot of people to travel with,
a lot of people.
Right? A lot of people to get anywhere on time, right?
Yeah, and, yo, now imagine, and each one of us bring somebody else with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's know? Right. I saw you guys, it was out at, just before Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, one of the Rock the Bells things.
Yes, Rock the Bells. Yeah. I saw that, and there were people showing up halfway through, and people leaving, and I was like, I've never seen a band like this. And just people randomly walk out in the middle of a song, and they don't do anything. And I was just like, well, this is weird.
Yeah, it's Wu-Tang for you, baby.
It was also the second time I'd ever been tear gassed was that night.
Oh, congratulations.
That was a big problem. Big problem with the crowd. I was like,
nothing but
awesome.
The best with you, Kevin. Nothing but the best, baby.
Well, I'm sad to say that we're almost out of time here, but the movie looks phenomenal. It's called The Man with the Iron Fists. We cannot urge the Kevin to be listeners any more than we are right now to go see it. I mean, it's coming up Friday, November the 2nd. That's next Friday. Directed, co-written, and starring and soundtracked by our friend Bobby. RZA in studio with us. And before we go, last chance, make the plea for the listeners. If they're still on the fence, why is this the movie to see?
Oh, because when you go to movies on Fridays and Saturdays, you want to have fun and have a good time. This movie is pure entertainment, pure fun, and you're going to have a blast. Get the biggest bucket of popcorn, yo, because this is one of those films that deserve it.
There you go. So great to meet you, man. Thanks so much for coming in. We really enjoyed it.
Thanks, buddy. Peace.
Ralph has one more look at the showbiz beat for the week here on the Kevin and Bean Show and more movie tickets?
Yes, that's correct. I've got tickets to the very special K-Rock advanced screening of Flight.
Yay!
Story of two funny indie rock musicians from New Zealand who get together and they get
no,
New
that's,
York.
That's Flight of the Conchords. That's a
you're confused. Yeah, that's not it.
It's a movie.
I thought this was the prequel.
No.
I thought this was just Flight. No, this is the movie starring Denzel Washington. I cannot wait to see this film. He plays an airline pilot who, a la Scully...
Or Sully.
saves an entire plane full of people with his guts and skill and bravery. But the inquiry after the fact to the accident turns his life upside down. And this looks amazing. One of my favorite directors, Robert Zemeckis, is responsible for this film, along with the cast, Denzel Washington, John Goodman, Don Cheadle. Couldn't ask for more. Is he Don Cheadle on 30 Rock this week?
No, I did not.
Doing a commercial for Mitt Romney?
No.
Yeah, they pay him $10 million to do a commercial for Mitt Romney, and he almost vomits halfway through filming it. It's pretty funny. Anyway, check this movie out. It's in theaters everywhere on Friday, November the 2nd. However, you, lucky people, will be able to see it Thursday, November the 1st. At the
What do you mean by you people?
By the lucky people who win tickets for this film. Thursday, November the 1st at the Arclight in Hollywood. If you would like to go, and why wouldn't you, call right now, 1-800-520-1067.
Yep.
Friday. It's been a long day. Five winners right now. 1-800-520-1067. Call in now to see Flight starring Denzel. It's been a while since Denzel's been in a movie. I was trying to think of the last time I saw him in something.
A train thing? No.
The Conductor? What the hell was that called? Him and Chris Pine were in that film, right?
Unstoppable. Yeah.
Pelican
Unstoppable.
Unstoppable.
Yeah. Book of Eli. That was before that.
It was though, before
right?
that. Yeah.
Anyway, always good. He's always good in everything he does. So, yeah, call now for your tickets for Flight. Well, I guess Connor Kennedy and Taylor Swift are never, ever, ever getting back together again.
Yeah.
They broke up. Now, Bean heard one part of the story. I heard another side of the story, and then I did some research, and I found both sides, so I'm not sure what to believe, who broke up with whom.
I think we're all speculating as to what happened, but I'm sure Taylor was to blame.
Some people said Connor Kennedy thought she was pushing too hard, wanting too much, just wigging him out. He's 18, she's 22.
Yeah, you can see that.
So that's what caused the split. Others say Taylor Swift was busy with her record release and her press and her touring and the scheduling. She just had no time for the 18-year-old high school student.
Can see that,
student.
Too.
So, anyway, they have split up. The good news is, for him at least, she bought a house right near the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport, so he'll be able to run into her all kinds of
She wasn't moving too fast.
Yeah, that'll be spectacular. She loves her some Kennedys. Rumor has
it. She seems a little... look, I love her, but she seems a little crazy to me and a little immature to not be able to
really?
Hang out with anyone for more than about
really?
6 weeks.
Really? You think she's immature?
Hmm. I do. Huh. I think so.
Huh. Do you get the sense that Hayden Panettiere character is based on her in the Nashville show, Bean?
I don't.
Who do you think it's based on?
Miranda Lambert.
But this is a pop, a young country pop star... Who's all her music is geared towards prepubescent girls.
Yeah. Sounds like it's written by a second grader?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're not the only one who has suggested that there's some shades of Taylor. But Taylor, I mean, writes her own songs, for instance. I mean, there are a lot of differences between her and the character on Nashville. But it's possible that, you know, it's an amalgamation of a bunch of characters, including her, certainly.
But she's evil. But Taylor's
I'm with
evil.
You, though. That's a great show, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And Hayden's sexy on that show, too.
She sure is.
I know
is.
Psycho Mike thought she was ugly and stuff. We had this argument before, but...
No, he was absurd.
I've always found her really attractive, but in this show, she's, like, over-the-top hot, in my opinion.
And who's not Taylor Swift.
That's true. Speaking of hot, you know, the sexy female costumes are coming out for Halloween. Happens every year. You can go as Sexy Big Bird this year, Sexy SWAT Officer, Sexy Robin Hood.
Just add sexy to whatever.
Sexy Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
But there's some women who find the so-called sexy costumes offensive.
ugly women?
And they are, have started a website called TakeBackHalloween.org, which is a free guide on how women can dress up as famous historical female figures of power. For example, why go to your Halloween party as the sexy slutty nurse when you can go as literature's Jane Austen?
That's so much better.
Why go as sexy French maid to your Halloween party when you can go as artist Frida Kahlo?
Wow.
Known for her monobrow and mustache.
Wow.
Yeah. Why go as sexy fill-in-the-blank when you can go as famous axe murderer Lizzie Borden, they suggest, if you want something a little scarier?
Yeah. They don't like sexy.
Yeah, stop it. Stop it. TakeBackHalloween.org. We want our girls as sexy as possible, and you'd be kind to leave us alone. Thank you.
I think they're killing their own cause by suggesting those costumes, though.
Kristen Stewart has a lot of work to do if she wants to make up what she's done to Robert Pattinson.
Blah, blah, blah.
Couple's back together again, but sources are saying our Pats is asking her to perform specific duties in order to get back into his good graces.
Yeah.
No, it's not like that.
Yeah. Oh.
He is making Kristen go to individual and couples counseling. No. And
not,
pay
not
for
that
both.
Good at couples counseling.
Our Pats is demanding that she ditch all the male friends in her life. Quit hanging out with all the single girls that she knows that are on the prowl. Can't party with the girls looking to get boned anymore. She has to cut contact with all ex-boyfriends. And my favorite item on the list, undergo a lie detector test.
Look, I don't
Did you bone the director of the Snow White movie? You know the answers, R. Pats. What do you need the test for?
Ralph, I don't think any of us could survive a lie detector test.
No!
But I give this relationship about 2.5 weeks, or whenever that movie comes out. Let's be honest.
I don't think so. I don't think they're doing this just...
I'll bet you money.
I don't think they're together for the premiere of the film.
I'm with Kevin. I think they've been paid, or at least they've been sternly spoken with about their obligation and contractual duties to promote this film as a couple.
I think they're contractually obligated to be a couple.
No, but to promote this movie together, in which case it's easier to pretend that you're a couple to promote the movie rather than it to be icy and awkward. Because now the story is the movie rather than the story is, oh my God, look, they're 10 feet
apart. Going out and doing things other than the premiere.
I know.
Why not just put the story out there and then go to the premiere together? Why do they have to go out and do things
together?
They're
laying the groundwork so people believe they're a couple, but they're going to break up as soon as the movie comes out.
You guys, I'm with Kevin on this one.
That's just ridiculous. They both have a lot of clout and power in Hollywood, and they don't have to do anything they don't
want
to do.
Right. They might want to do this for the movie.
If they hate each other, you think they want to do that for the movie?
Yeah.
No. She will barely have a conversation for the movie. You think she's going to date a guy she doesn't want to date for
yes,
the movie?
Yes, I do.
Well, you're sadly mistaken.
I didn't know you knew.
I know. I know, man. I'm in Camp Arpats, and we've had conversations about you two, and they're not flattering. That's all right.
That's a bunch of hogwash.
The new film, Wanted, it's not new at all. The new sequel to Wanted is in the works. See Wanted with Angelina Jolie? Remember she was in that Assassin's Guild?
Yeah, I like
she
that.
She taught James McAvoy how to be an assassin, how That's to bend right. the bullet.
Yeah. Bending bullets, I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, good movie. I like that, too. They're coming out with a sequel. And the writer for the screenplay says, everyone was asking him, Angelina Jolie, you going to have her back? How are you going to bring her back? How does she come back? And he kept saying, did you see the bullet go into her head? So Angelina Jolie will not be returning to that film. Spoiler alert, by the way.
Oh.
People who haven't seen Wanted 5 years ago. James McAvoy, however, will return in the sequel, and apparently he will return in the same mentor role as Angelina did, but this time to a talented younger woman who is going to be brought along by the guild. So he will teach instead of being the student this time around. And sad, sad movie news. Adam Sandler has announced his next project. It's going to be a Western parody. Parody of the classic Western, The Magnificent Seven. It's going to be a spoof on Westerns. He'll be a funny cowboy.
Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler will be.
A funny cowboy.
The spoof of The Magnificent Seven will be called The Ridiculous Six. See what he did there?
That's a brainstorming idea.
Listen.
Though. That's not the
listen,
final.
Adam Sandler just wants to reach the truth in his films. He just wants to accomplish the truth. That's all he wants, man.
Doesn't there have to be some sort of, I don't know, presence of Western movies for them to be parodied? Like, nobody's seeing Western movies anymore.
Right.
What's there to parody for
the
viewers?
Well, I think
constructs are eternal. Everyone knows the horses and the small town, and we've all seen it enough. The sheriff, and there's enough traits and traditions of the Western that we're all familiar with, whether we're watching them now or not, that you could build a film.
But who's the worst?
I'm eventually trying to one day tell the truth. I don't know if I'm ever going to get there, but I'm slowly letting pieces of myself out there, and then maybe by the time I'm 85, I'll look back and say, all right, that about summed it up.
He's an artist, man. He's trying to get the truth across in his work.
Not with this okay. one.
So the redemption.
Can't say that. That's what I see in his soul.
But you can't say
but
it.
I looked in there and that's what I saw.
Ralph.
I'm just telling you what I saw.
Right, but not on the radio.
It's
you
the
have
third
to
time
it.
Today.
Well, I figured three's a charm, right? Kevin almost didn't catch that. He's like,
I caught it.
La, la, la. He's looking around the room.
I caught it.
He's coloring in an Elmo book over there.
How dare you?
No attention span.
So Joshua Jackson, check. Woo! Robert Kirkman, check. Ralph Garman, check.
There we go.
All three of you.
They are the three brothers of...
Yes.
Yeah. Today's celebrity birthdays. John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite's 35 years old today. Seth MacFarlane, my good friend from Family Guy and Ted, turns 39. Keith Urban, American Idol judge, 45 years old. Kelly Rowan of The O.C. is 47. Natalie Merchant from 10,000 Maniacs turns 49. Tom Cavanaugh. Remember Ed? We used to love that show, Ed, about the guy who... bought the bowling alley in his old hometown, went back there. He's trying to win over that the mom from the Modern Family.
Julie Bowen, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 49 years old. Carrie Elwes from Saw and the Princess Bride movies, 50 years old. Dylan McDermott is 51. Rita Wilson, wife of Tom Hanks and a very talented producer and actress in her own right, is 56. And Pat Sajak from Wheel of Fortune, 66 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Monday morning, we are going to tell you all about, we just had breakfast with the Black Keys. We have another brand new breakfast, and we will tell you about it and start giving you tickets on Monday morning show.
I hope it's this band that does this song.
It is not.
It's Courtney Stott. That's what I hope.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
That guy will make me howl of honey boo-boo.
Don't bogart that joint. Pass it over to me.
How can you love it? It's crap.
Roll another one.
That is witty as all hell.
Just like the other one.
You know what? Respect. That's a ball of
this
news.
One seems to be about to quit.
The only thing I know for sure is you're a goddamn liar.
I need another hit.
Outside my window, having spooks behind a tree.
Roll.
Was cut out of the movie, or it was everything kept in?
Oh my god!
Let's pass it around.
That's simply unacceptable.
I loved McHale's Neighbors.
Sometimes I lie awake at night and I ask, when will it all end? Then a voice comes to me that says, right after the credits.
That's enough. No more talking.
It's pina colada time! And stop!
Great job, and very informative. But we need to stop now, forever, and pretend like this never happened.
Cut! Print! That was perfect! Great job, everybody! Great job!